It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running for this Labor Day 2021. It is the sixth day of September 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific, and all times in between, etc. Hi, I'm Robin, and it is Moran Monday as well, and oh Lord, we've got them. It just seems like they get the Morans, it's more toxic than funny these days. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's me. Who knows? We might do a Labor Day on the front porch if anybody's interested. I mentioned that on Friday. We'll see how that plays out. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different, so thanks go out to our 6th, 5th, and 4th day of the month subscribers via PayPal. Mm-hmm. So thanks indeed to Michael in Madison, and thank you to Kitty in Boston. Thank you, Kim and Malin in New Jersey. Thank you, Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you to John. Thank you to Bob. Thank you very kindly. And thank you to James in Illinois. Thank you to Bernice. Thank you to Kevin in Colorado Springs. Thank you, Kenda, out in Missouri. Thank you to David in San Diego. Thank you to Roberto. And let's see here. Thanks to Paul and Thomas. And David, thank you very kindly. And that gets us all the way back to Friday on the front porch, wherein we had a, no kidding, honest-to-goodness, community-made miracle on Friday, and that took a lot of stress off. It did indeed, and thank you all. We'll get things started this evening because the fundraising goal is just the regular $300, and it's actually $280 now, thanks to Jessica up in Minnesota, who writes, subject line, no coincidences. You've commented a time or two how there are no coincidences, but there are a few coordinated instances, nicely done, that have occurred this past week that I can't help but note and smirk about. You mentioned your surgery is scheduled for November the 9th, and it didn't automatically click with me, but as a patient at the Mayo Clinic's Transgender and Intersex Care Clinic, I'm required to take an educational course on gender confirmation surgery, which for me will be on October 4th, and my initial consultation with the surgeon will be November 9th. So while you'll be on the tail end of the process, I'll be at the beginning. And I haven't mentioned this on Facebook, and I think I'm safe in disclosing things here. I mean, nobody listening. But I'm also beginning my surgical process, too, except starting at the top and working my way down. 6 days after you have your procedure, I'm tentatively scheduled to undergo the first part of my facial feminization surgery on November 15th. For those who may not know what FFS entails, it involves chiseling and grinding down the prominent features of the face and recontouring and giving them a more feminine profile. We're starting with the majority of my face, and 3 months later will be rhinoplasty, the reason for the two-part procedure being all the complicated structures that need to be modified during the nose job, and it's a 4-hour marathon in and of itself, on top of the 8 hours needed for everything else. How's that for connections? Now, add to this mix the fact that your news came a couple of days after I observed on Facebook the birthday of Caroline Cossey. the transgender model actress who was fairly popular when I was younger and who was a positive role model for young eggs like me. I had inklings about my gender identity as a young person and didn't begin questioning until I was 16, but 13-year-old me sat and watched the infamous interview she did with Phil Donahue and how gracefully she handled the situation. I think she gave me a little nudge towards realizing who I was. I also paid tribute to Christine Jorgensen, one of the first people who underwent GCS and the first person in the U.S. to reach notoriety for having the procedure done in the early 1950s. I've been reading about her over the past week, and I watched the 1970 biopic about her. And it makes me realize how much I have yet to learn about trans history and LGBTQIA+ history in general. And for those who are wondering where I'm going with this, it's because of pioneers like Christine Jorgensen and other trailblazers like Caroline Cossey that allow Robin and me and other transgender men and women and non-binary and gender non-conforming folks to live our lives as our real selves. And I'm genuinely happy for you, Robin. Thank you, Jessica. And I wish you all the best in this next part of your journey. Lord knows I'm going to need all the luck I can get for mine. And it comes back to you in merry measure, Jessica. And so here's 1952, as 1952 is the year Christine had her operation, I think, and the odd change to make it an even $20, so there won't have to be any ciphering. So we're at 280, so thank you very kindly, Jessica, for all of that, and it being Labor Day and all, you might actually be at home listening live and not having to be at work, and that would be wonderful. That's a lovely note. And Ron and Raleigh gets us started as well. And so it begins. No, my Sawbones appointment is... Oh, I see what you did there. Ah. You know, the rest of the world doesn't write November 9th as 11-9. The rest of the world writes November 9th as 9-11. And Brother Deacon Asa just said, wait, your Sawbone appointment is on 9/11. What are you trying to hide from us, Robin? They did once call once upon a time back in the bad old days of terrestrial radio. They did refer to me as Bob L. Kincaida, but we'll let that go, right? And so it begins, writes Ron in Raleigh. The subject line is the tagline from Babylon 5, my third favorite sci-fi show. The reason I use that line is because after SCOTUS abrogated the responsibility vis-a-vis the Texas anti-abortion bill, an article in my local newspaper on Saturday stated that the Republican legislators are planning a similar bill here in North Carolina as soon as they finish gerrymandering the voting districts. The largest voting bloc here in North Carolina is Democrats, followed by unaffiliated, and then Republicans. Democrats and unaffiliated voters double the number of Republicans, yet the Republican Party is, as of now, holding 10 of the 14 House seats in the state. With redistricting, the Republicans hope to regain a supermajority so they can run roughshod over democracy and pass anything without fear of a veto. They also plan to further strip the governor of power. The plot of most James Bond movies is some ultra-wealthy megalomaniac who wants to take over the world and reshape it to his idea of perfection. The megalomaniac in the United States is one Leonard Leo. Pay attention to the name. Mr. Leo is the hidden hand behind all of Trump's judicial appointments. 6 Supreme Court justices and fully one-third of all appellate court justices on the federal bench were hand-picked by Leonard Leo. If you wondered where Brett Kavanaugh got the filthy lucre to pay his mortgage and gambling debts, and don't forget the baseball tickets, I suggest you look no further than Leonard Leo. I've been thinking about putting up a murder board with photos and a red string to connect all the dark money that Leo and the rest of his ilk are using to undermine what little democracy we have left. While the right talks about George Soros being the puppet master, it is just a diversion to keep people from looking at who's really trying to rule the world. And every word of what Ron just wrote and sent is true. Absolutely. And by the way, the other thing that that Ron makes note of, the fact that North Carolina is going to do them a rat on your neighbor bill just as soon as they can get the everything gerrymandered up to ram it through, speaks to something that I mentioned last week, namely that these things will pop up like toxic mushrooms after a spring rain, all over. The Confederacy, and generally speaking, the maggot states. And because the Supreme Court didn't stop this one, women are at hazard in every state where there is a maggot majority. Jesus. It's revolting. Truly. Thank you, Ralphs. Ralphs just jumped in and got us down to 260 to go for the evening. Thank you so much, Ralphs. That is most kind. Toxic Morans, Lee in New York, says, it must be the ivermectin. Yeah. Horse-paced Republicans. Yeah. Jesus. Oh, Ralph says, my rapid COVID test came back negative, but my friend now can't smell or taste anything, so I'm going to get a PCR test on Wednesday, I think. Better safe than sorry, without a doubt. But congratulations on the rapid test coming back negative. I'm happy to hear that, Ralphs. The Judicial Monetary Industrial Complex, Stephen, New York, says Sheldon Whitehouse did a great speech on the floor of the Senate of the Federalist Society to Federal Bench Pipeline. Check that out, too. And hopefully, maybe some of this stuff will be scrutinized as the Congress takes up an examination of what is being referred to as the shadow docket. The way in which this toxic Supreme Court does its evil business sort of outside the bright lights of the regular term of the court. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Sparky says he has no idea. If we're going to have a front porch. So we'll just put it out there and see if anybody wants to come and play. And I got to tell you, it is brutal here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion.
Hot!
Ever since the air conditioner bit the dust, it's been a little, well, we went through a cold snap, but today was not so cold. And I swear if there was any more humidity in this room, we would have spontaneous indoor thunderstorms or maybe a tornado or two. Ew, sticky, sweaty, nasty. Ah, okay, Asa has to post the link. So if Brother Deacon Asa, if you are listening, could we get a front porch link up at headon.live? Pretty please, yeah? So you get an idea of where some of this is going this evening, this afternoon. And since, it's very much a visual thing because there's basically just noise, but there was an incident, and in a way, the incidents in Florida and Georgia. One was a case of the roulette wheel of death stopping in Polk County, Florida. Juanita, our dear friend Juanita, brought this to my attention. A former Marine sharpshooter dressed in full body armor and wielding an automatic weapon allegedly went on an early morning shooting, and I don't know why ABC News puts rampage in quotes. Maybe they're quoting someone who called it a rampage. That would at least be journalism. But the former Marine sharpshooter murdered four total strangers, including a mother and her baby, and wounded an 11-year-old girl before he gave himself up. He did survive. The cops didn't kill him. The individual... the news story goes to great length not to identify until deep into the story. He went to a house and demanded to see Amber, because he had a message for her. God sent me here to speak with one of your daughters, Amber, to keep her from committing suicide. There was no one named Amber there at all. And the owner of the home, the occupant of the home, said, there's nobody here by that name. But, you know, when God's talking to you and you've got a gun, well, Merca happens. The greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, and universe forever under God. And so he came back. This is somewhere around Lakeland, Florida, about 35 miles east of Tampa. And he came back shooting. And now that he's been safely taken into custody after murdering four people, he's facing one count of attempted first-degree murder, four counts of first-degree murder, seven counts of attempted first-degree murder on a law enforcement officer, shooting into an occupied dwelling, two counts of armed burglary with battery, arson, and cruelty to an animal. And it all went down in the wee hours before sunrise. And God, what a horror. The thing is, law enforcement had gotten a call nine hours earlier from the same home. And that's when the woman told the person at the 911 dispatch center about the guy who said, God sent me here to speak with one of your daughters. I wish God would shut up. Wouldn't that be nice? Shut up! But then again, as is always the case, it's not like God isn't shutting up. It's the people who think they're hearing God. Yeah. Our killer, by the way, is Brian James Riley. He's 33 years old. He's from Brandon, Florida. Like I said, a Marine sharpshooter. And who knows, but if this is just another instance of the brutal legacy of George W. Bush's combined attacks against the people of Afghanistan and Iraq.
Because they tried to kill my daddy. Fuck Saddam. We're taking him out.
The sheriff of Polk County said, at that moment in time, as we approached, we saw an individual totally outfitted in body armor and looked as if he was ready to engage us all in an active shooter situation. The suspect shot at our lieutenant. Our lieutenant returned fire and backed out of the house. And three deputies in front of the house were pinned down by the one guy's gunfire. I can tell you there are at least dozens, if not hundreds, of rounds fired this morning between our suspect and our deputies who were directing fire back at him. I presume there will have to be an autopsy just to find out whose bullet actually killed the individuals. An 11-year-old girl was shot at least seven times. Might want to find those bullets. The shooter took one bullet, walked out of the house with his hands up, and surrendered. No word in here as to whether they took him to Burger King or not. The victims were Justice Gleason, aged 40, a 33-year-old white female, her 3-month-old baby, and the baby's 62-year-old grandma. And the lawful gun owner also wasted Dioji, the family dog. Yeah. Freedom, y'all. And the cops say, you know, we have died. We don't know how he ended up there or why he ended up there. He did, however, mention to the deputies involved that he's a survivalist and he'd been self-medicating with methamphetamine. And there's our quote. There's where the quote comes from. Sheriff Judd said, this guy admitted to us he was taking those drugs before he went on this active shooter rampage. And then he went ahead and tried to get an officer's gun when he was at the hospital. They had to fight him again in the Lakeland emergency room. Once we got him tied down, they gave him medication to render him unable to fight any longer, and they could continue to treat him. Huh. Wonder if they dosed him with ketamine. Yeah. When they said, "Why'd you do it?" he said, "Because I'm a sick guy. I want to confess to all of it and be sent to jail." And he also said he set fire to a pickup truck to create an exit strategy for him to get away. And he had, there's our answer. Mm-hmm. Honorably discharged Marine. And worked as a bodyguard for an executive protection company. And he served tours in both Afghanistan and Iraq. Again, the bitter, bitter, bitter legacy. So up in Georgia, it wasn't quite as bad, but it was an attack of a different sort. Lowndes High School, I presume Lowndes County, Georgia. It happened in the lunchroom. People were eating lunch, and a virile young male went up to an LGBTQIA+ kid who was wearing a pride flag, you know, the rainbow flag, and ripped the flag off the kid, dragged him to the floor, and, the kid, it goes without saying, but we live in a country where you have to ask things like, you know, if you're dealing with a rape, how was the victim dressed? Well, the little LGBTQ+ kid was sitting there all the way across the cafeteria from this young thug, white boy, of course, who, with no provocation whatsoever, attacked this kid. We can at least do the audio. There's not much to be heard except, you know. So the kid steals the flag, throws it in a trash can, dumps the trash can over, and the bet, you know, on top of it all, in the foreground of the video is a girl, a little white blonde-haired girl, and oh, she thinks it's just so funny. Oh, she's just a laughing, and she's got her hand over her mouth, she's a laughing. This kid's got problems. The boy does. I don't know. Look kind of beefy. He's probably on one of those student athletic teams that are said to be so good for character development. So, Lowndes High School Assistant Principal Rodney Green said, "We take the well-being and safety of our students seriously. Our staff works hard to provide a safe environment where all of our students feel valued." Assistant Principal Green, you apparently don't take it that seriously because this happened. One student speaking to WLAB News Channel 10, Eyewitness Action Team News coverage, said, "I feel like me and my friends are unsafe because the majority of us are part of the LGBT community and you would think going to school would be a safe place." Oh, child, honey, we don't have time. It ain't. But there's people with so much hatred that will hate you and do anything they can to you just because you're different and want to express yourself, and it's really hard. And all I can say is that I hope it gets better. Mm-hmm. The young thug is facing disorderly conduct, simple battery, and disruption of a public facility. That, according to the sheriff of Lowndes County, one Ashley Palk, and of course nothing will happen, and the little white kid will not be subjected to the school-to-prison pipeline because not wrong colored. Yeah. Back to Polk County, Florida. Brother Deacon Asa says, "Can we get an over-under as to whom we think Mr. Brian James Riley, age 33, of Florida, voted for in the 2020 election?" Well, I think something like wagering on that would be inappropriate because you could never get the odds and the money right. No, because it's like 100% dude voted for, you know, the former guy. Don't really even have to ask with stories like that. No. And so, well, what's that old Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young song? Teach your children well?
Right.
Oh, and by the way, Trey in Kentucky Stan via Twitter has been keeping us posted for the last few weeks on the positivity rate there in Kentucky Stan. You might recall that this past Friday, the COVID positivity rate was 13.17%. I'm sure it's gone up since then. And Andy Beshear, the governor of Kentucky, is taking it seriously, but there's only so much he can do because, well, feed them! Right? You know, because he lives in a country with 50 petty kingdoms, and several of them are run by the likes of Florida's governor, Rona Death Sentence, and Greg Abbott in Texas. And then there's Kristi Noem, the bioterrorist in South Dakota, who has presided over two massive super spreader events. And dear God, it turns out that she had a miniature, just because more in Monday, she had a miniature Mount Rushmore made that put Donald Trump up there with Lincoln and Teddy Roosevelt and George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. Yeah, Trump. God. Sycophant. But Andy Beshear is trying to take it more seriously. He is, of course, a Democrat. And he showed up on Meet the Press on NBC yesterday and laid out just exactly the dire nature of the circumstance. He said, if I had the ability to do it right now, we would have a masking order when you're in public and indoors. We know that's a proven way to slow the spread of the virus and ultimately help our healthcare capacity. Our situation is dire. And on September the 4th, the Kentucky 7-day average reached 4,423 new daily cases. And on Meet the Press, Andy Beshear said, we're setting case records. We have a record number of Kentuckians in the hospital battling COVID in the ICU, battling for their lives. We have a record number of families that are praying for their loved one who's on a ventilator, needing that assistance to breathe. And, of course, what is the what's the Kentucky Republican legislature doing? Not shit! He'd like to have a statewide mask mandate for the public schools in Kentucky, but the Republicans are more in favor of letting the disease spread and kill even among their own electorate. 57% of Kentucky adults, by the way, are at least partially vaccinated. That's higher than a number of Stan states, Confederate states. But Beshear was sort of clear-eyed and sad about it all. He said, we're well past, I think, all across America, the populations that are going to listen to a government official and take the vaccine because of it. A friend might lose their life if they don't get vaccinated. And then meanwhile, here in almost level West by Coal, Trump Virginia Stan, make West Virginia great big old governor Dithering Jim Justice, that's his new name, also known as Fat Hamlet, because of his indecisiveness. I just happened to catch his morning COVIDiot briefing today, and he went through the list of the recent dead. He does that. He reads out the names of people who have been who died from COVID since the last time he addressed the good people of the state of West Virginia. sort of like a negative, the way it's sort of a more grim way. Like, well, you remember how Willard Scott used to wish happy birthday to the 100-year-olds on the Today Show. Willard Scott passed away this weekend. Mm-hmm. Didn't quite make that 100 mark. I was rooting for him. Our buddy Scott in San Diego has spoken of Willard Scott on a number of occasions. But Willard Scott passed away, and, well, Dither and Jim Justice was doing his best, I don't know, Angel of Death Willard Scott impression today. God, I mentioned a 102-year-old woman who died of COVID. God love her, and for all the wisdom that she shared with us during her life. He never met her. And frankly, couldn't care less. Jim Justice cares about one thing. Jim Justice. Well, and Baby Dog. Do it for Baby Dog. They had their we had our first big giveaway in the Do It for Baby Dog lottery here, where we're using COVID money that was meant to help actual, working people hurt by the pandemic and the economic collapse that surrounded it. We're using it for a lottery, because people don't have enough common decency to get the goddamn vaccine without being bribed to do it. Yeah. And he kept saying, well, in no way, shape, form, or fashion am I going to impose a statewide mask mandate. I don't want to do that. And the subtext there is because the maggots will have a hissy, and God knows he doesn't want to be protested at again. And, well, if we shut down football season, West Virginia might just spontaneously freaking combust. Yeah. Really? We think local control is working just fine, and the places that's closest to the problem is the ones what can make the decisions all better and stuff and everything. And everything. Every one of his sentences ends with "and everything." He hasn't yet told his COVID Kunta Kinte story, but, well, I remain hopeful. But seriously, his Hamlet was far more eloquent than "Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice," but his indecisiveness is right there on a par with Hamlet. To mandate or not to mandate, that there is your question. Whether it is nobler in the mind to suffer a whole bunch of West Virginians dropping dead, or to oppose it, and by opposing, end it. Something like that. And so there's Dither and Jim dithering along. Oh, he rings his hand. He is one of the best hand ringers that I have seen in recent memory, without a doubt. But the hand ringing has consequences. And just this past week, we had something in this county over in a little community called Oak Hill, O-A-K-H-I-L-L, Oak Hill, West Virginia. It's in Fayette County. Lovely little town. And about this time every year, they have the Oak Leaf Festival. And they had it this time. They had it this time, even though the head of the Fayette County Health Department said, you know, we really shouldn't be doing this. And this person is brave and bold, and also said, you know what else we need to not be doing? Bridge Day. Mm-hmm. Because that'll be 100,000 people packed as butthole to belly button as you can get a bunch of human beings packed in. All out there 876 feet above the surface of the New River and the New River Gorge. Watching people jump off the bridge and walking back and forth, because you can't do that the rest of the year. Only tourists come here and ride their bicycles out on the bridge, because it's illegal as fuck, and not particularly intelligent either. But that's coming. So imagine. We didn't have it last year, because we were in the midst of the lockdown. And we still had a shit ton of Bridge Day activities. But we're going to have Bridge Day this year. And oh my God, Becky, look at that virus, we're going to be covered up. I'm really wishing I could get hold of that. I've been trying to correspond with a manufacturing concern in China to get full body condoms. You know, with little N95 filters where the mouth and the nose are, and little, right, and just so that we can. Nah, I kid. But while the head of the Fayette County Health Department says, you know, we need to not be doing this. This is going to kill a shit ton of people. Well, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice, Dithering Jim, Fat Hamlet. He just doesn't have it in him. And that law, I mean, I sat there watching this thing today because, I mean, it's kind of my job. And him talking about letting the counties make their decisions on their basic local county levels. And I thought, hey, bub, there aren't any walls around these counties. Nobody's keeping people. This is the kind of thing where you act on a statewide basis or act not at all. And Dithering Jim appears to have chosen act not at all. And it has consequences. People all over this county and outside this county are quarantined right now. Voluntarily, of course. Because anyone who went to the Oak Leaf Festival, and that was no small crowd, well, a notification went out. Pretty much to anybody who did attend it. It came from the City of Mount Hope Fire Department for immediate release. Several of the workers and volunteers for the Oak Leaf Festival have tested positive for COVID-19. If you attended the festival on Saturday, September 4th, you should consider yourself exposed to the virus. Please self-monitor for symptoms and take advantage of free testing opportunities. Please do not go to MedExpress or the local hospitals to be tested for COVID-19. Our hospital system is working above capacity, taking care of critically ill patients. Instead, please take advantage of one of the opportunities listed below. The health department is pleading with the community to get vaccinated, practice physical distancing, wash hands, and wear face coverings when in public. And the Fayette County Health Department number is below, and God knows they've probably received more obscene phone calls in the last 2 days than... Yeah. Because, you know, freedom. You know, the freedom to be horizontally crucified because morons. Yeah. My God. And this is why we can't have nice things. Yeah. I guess there's a little good news, though, because the leader of the Proud Boys, Enrique Tarrio, remember, he was also a stool pigeon for the, he was a snitch for the FBI, and I like to make sure that that gets out there anytime we mention him. He got sentenced. He actually got sentenced for burning a Black Lives Matter banner in D.C. D.C. back in December during the Trump rally. He's going to do 155 whole days in jail. Well, on the way to jail, he offered up a statement saying, I'm not worried and feel at peace with what I must do over the next 5 months. Keep protesting, keep holding power to account, and never back down. They want to kill you, our patriotism, and cause the total erasure of our culture. Oh, for God's sakes. Yeah, he's being erased. And then announced that he was going to do a memoir. And he's already got a title for it. American Warlord. Yeah. 155 whole days for participating in the front end of an insurrection against the idea of constitutional governance in the new 90 states of America. Yeah. Now, I wish I was kidding, but no, Christy Noem, as I mentioned earlier, commissioned a sculptor to do a mini Mount Rushmore and put Donald Trump on it. Yeah. And over at the Daily Beast, Tom Lawrence reported, Trump reportedly wished that his mug could be added to the real thing, but Noem, of course, could not make that happen. Instead, she found donors to underwrite the smaller ego-stroking project. Oh, there's just a, there's a sentence that I did not need to read the word stroking in. Dallery Davis is an art agent in Rapid City, South Dakota. And Noem's office reached out to her to see if they could do a mini Mount Rushmore and put Trump on it. Mm-hmm. And Dallery Davis put him in touch. Put Christy Noem in touch with Lee Lunning and Sherry Treby. They're a team of sculptors in South Dakota, and they've got lots of pieces on display around the Midwest. And well, what they said is, hey, they're good and they work fast. And here's the best of all, they're maggots too. Yeah. And so they grafted, there's a good use of the word, a bust of Nitwit Nero in a suit and tie onto the mini Mount Rushmore. Nitwit Nero got one of them, and the other two went to unidentified donors. They don't even know who it was. 27 inches wide, 12 inches high, and 8.5 inches deep. Well, that's deeper than Donald Trump by about 8. Well, 8 3/8 inches. And it set Christy Noem back $1,100. But you know what? You can't calculate that kind of cult behavior. You can't put a dollar value on that level of sycophancy. No, you just can't. Mm-mm. And I mentioned the shooting rampage in Florida, Stan. Well, the roulette wheel of death spun and landed on Independence, Missouri over the weekend, too. I think of our Missouri friends when I see stories like this. There's something called the Santa Caligon Days Festival. It celebrates the fact that Independence was the point of departure for the Santa Fe Trail and California and the Oregon Trail. It was where wagon trains were assembled in the 18th century. And, well, it closed on Friday night because of inclement weather. Usually about 300,000 people show up. But somebody cut loose with their, I'm sure it was a lawful gun owner, cut loose with their freedom protector there at the Santa Caligon Festival on Sunday night. Yeah. Four victims, four children, were taken to the hospital with what were described as non-life-threatening injuries. You know, life-threatening or not, hurts like hell. And not a hell of a lot of further detail on the issue. Reuters had the report. And that's pretty much it, but hey, it's just another shooting in Merca. And, well, we have to have those because we wouldn't have ourselves all kinds of freedom and shit if we didn't. I mean, four little kids getting shot at a Pioneer wagon train festival. I mean, that's... You know, the tree of liberty must be watered from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. It is its natural manure. I mean, slave raper Thomas Jefferson done said that. Yeah. Yeah. They're everywhere, the Morans. They really are. And, of course, it wouldn't be a Moran Monday if we didn't have a, you know, a Lindsey Graham sighting. Yeah. BBC host Stephen Sacker interviewed Lindsey Graham this weekend. The program he was interviewed on was called Hard Talk. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that got Miss Lindsey in a terrible case of the vapors. And God, he's so sickening. He has, among other things, a bloodlust that is positively revolting. Because you know what Lindsey wants? Lindsey's Butch quotient went way the hell down when we left Afghanistan. He was having so much fun watching other children, other people's children die. Yes.
He destroyed the caliphate. Okay, it rose on Obama and Biden's watch, and Trump sent the military in to destroy it. When he left, there were 2,500 U.S. soldiers on the ground with NATO allies. They're no longer there. He killed Soleimani, which I think was a good thing. He rebuilt the military in a fashion where we can be effective all over the globe. The deterioration of the military during the Obama years was real. So here's my point. Whether you like Trump or not, whether you believe it's Trump's fault or Biden's fault, here's where we're at as a world. The Taliban are not reformed. They're not new. They have a view of the world out of sync with modern times. They're going to impose a lifestyle on the Afghan people that I think is going to make us all sick to our stomach. But most importantly, they're going to give safe haven to Al-Qaeda, who has ambitions to drive us out of the Mideast writ large. And
Bruga.
We will be going back into Afghanistan as we went back into Iraq and Syria.
And Stephen Sacker was like, what? But, yeah, there's Lindsey saying, we're gonna get our war on in the Middle East. Because we got to make Jesus come back from down up in the clouds. And come down in his home. You're going to be pissed. Lindsey loves him some war. He just loves a man in uniform. Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ. And I guess, I don't know. I guess people in South Carolina like having people like Lindsey out there beating the war drums and waving the bloody shirt to send their babies off to fight meaningless wars in faraway places. Yeah, I know. You know, Al-Qaeda wants to drive us out of the Middle East. You know what? We wouldn't have to be driven out of the Middle East if we had the common good sense it takes to boil fucking water and weren't there in the first place. Oh, God. But, yeah, let's catch up with Stephen Sacker, who, what?
Do you seriously think the United States will once again, in a foreseeable future,
yes,
put troops back into
we'll
Afghanistan?
We'll have to, because the threat will be so large. Why did we go back to Syria and Iraq? Why do we have 5,000 troops in Iraq today? Because of the caliphate rising, projecting force outside of Iraq, killing Americans, killing the French, attacking the British. So, yes, it will be...
By the way, I despise the historical revisionism on display here. Donald Trump destroyed the caliphate. Then why do we still have troops in there fighting the caliphate? If Donald Trump done destroyed it. You know, Lindsey's nose is going to be permanently stained brown if he doesn't get it out of that crease one of these days. Hmm? I don't understand the war fetish. I don't. It serves no national interest for us to continue meddling in places like Afghanistan. But Lord, the nice thing for Lindsey is it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because if we can just get another... Well, you know, if he can just get Trump back in the White House, or maybe somebody smarter than Trump who knows how to use the tools that Trump brought into currency, hoo-wee, we can go to war everywhere. We can fight everybody. because that's what Merca does best. Right? I mean, I guess some people are just that way. I mean, probably Lindsay's daddy and Lindsay's great-granddaddy, probably going all the way back to multi-great-grandpa Graham or whatever, out there taking up arms against their own country. Yeah. Things, yeah. Wrap it up, Lindsay.
Aldrin for radical Islamic behavior. You cannot deal with this over the horizon. Here's my solution. Help the resistance in the Panjshir Valley. The Taliban will not be able to govern Afghanistan. They're hated by the Afghan people. What's going to happen over time is you're going to see the resistance rise. ISIS will come after the Taliban large, and the entire country is going to fracture in the next year, creating a perfect storm for Western interests to be attacked. You can do one of two things. You can say, that's no longer my problem. Let it build and get hit, or hit them before they hit you.
What a vast intellect he is. ISIS is going to come back and hit him hard. It's just so pathetic. Just pathetic. And by the way, thank you, Smitty. Smitty just jumped in and got us down to 235. 235 for fundraising this evening. That's a nice little start. Thank you very kindly. Much appreciated. Steve in New York, the caliphate. There was no fucking caliphate. Also, Soleimani had nothing to do with the caliphate. Why? The aspiration of the caliphate was an ISIS inspiration, and ISIS is a Sunni group, and Soleimani was a Shia Iranian Muslim. Caliphate is Lindsay's dog whistle for Emery and Marveline, because they have no idea what the caliphate is, but they know, and Lindsay knows they know. That sounds all Muslimish, and certainly not Jesus-ish. I know. Yeah. Oh, and as to Trump sculpture, Steve said, 27 inches wide, 27 inches high, 8.5 inches deep, 2 plus 7 equals 9, 2 plus 7 equals 9, 8.5 rounds to 9. Yeah, okay. Thank you for the ciphering. Oh, no, Flavio with a reminder. Richard Spencer's having a bad Labor Day weekend. Last month, Spencer's wife divorced him. His trial in Charlottesville, Virginia, for his role in instigating the deadly white nationalist rally in 2017 is next month, and he's so broke he can't afford a lawyer. Aw, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Richard Spencer, you might recall, is also the guy who got punched in the face for being a Nazi, because sometimes you just can't resist punching a Nazi in the face. Right. So much. And just because it's more and mundane, we need a really, really righteous dose of stupid. I'm so glad I don't do right wing radio. The shit that I would have to do, I mean, oh my God. Ah, okay. Wait a minute. I get it now. I get it. The ciphering that Steve sent along took me a minute. It was all an allusion to still dead Herb Cain and his 999. Wow. Oh, man, I wish I had a turntable and some vinyl records to play backwards. Oh, my God, it all makes sense. Along the way, we get this from The Intercept. Darlene shared this along. It's Ryan Grimm writing at The Intercept. It's a story that comes to us from October 9th, 2009. Barack Obama had been in office for about 9 months, 8 and a half. And he got the generals together and the cabinet and then Vice President Joe Biden. And they wanted to put together an Afghan war strategy. And as Ryan Grimm points out, we'd been at it for 8 years by then, getting a whole lot of nowhere. But that was the morning, that was the evening of the morning where Barack Obama found out that he had just won the Nobel Peace Prize. And so a pair of generals, Stanley McChrystal and David Petraeus, were there. Lots of other folks with military jewelry on their shoulder boards, and they wanted to run the troop presence in Afghanistan to 85,000 and run a and make it more possible, they said, for the United States to train up a larger Afghan National Army. Sorry, I don't mean to laugh. Afghan National Army. So they could surrender in larger numbers. And Joe Biden was the one who spoke up and challenged the generals. Looking at General McChrystal, Joe Biden is reported to have said, "As I hear what you're saying, as I read your report, you're saying that we have about a year, and that our success relies upon having a reliable, strong partner in governance to make this work." Oh, clever. Because Stanley McChrystal looks at him, General McChrystal says, "Well, yes." So Joe Biden looked at another former general who was the ambassador to Afghanistan at the time, Carl Eikenberry, and said, "In your estimation, can that be achieved in the next year?" At which point the ambassador to Afghanistan, Mr. Eikenberry, said, no, we can't do that because we don't have a good faith partner in Afghanistan. And laid out 10 minutes worth of absolute failures. We talk about clear and hold and build, but we actually have to include transfer into this. We're going to have to turn everything over to them at some point in time. And went so far as to say, "I'd challenge the assumption that the U.S. and the Afghan government are even aligned. Right now we're dealing with an extraordinarily corrupt government." That's when General Petraeus stood up, or spoke up, and said, "I understand the government is a criminal syndicate, but we need to help achieve and improve security and, as noted, regain the initiative and turn some recent tactical gains into operational momentum. Hoo-ah!" And that's when Joe Biden... And maybe this all... I can't see how this didn't inform the decision that he reached regarding getting the hell out of Afghanistan. By the way, for which I still praise him. I will not join the chorus of nattering nabobs of negativity who somehow want to make this Joe Biden's fault. This 20-year freaking nightmare, this godforsaken, hot, stinking mess. No. And so Biden said, "If the government's criminal syndicate a year from now, how will troops make a difference?" And as Bob Woodward reports in his 2010 book, Obama's Wars, well, nobody had an answer. In the book he writes, "No one recorded an answer in their notes. Biden was swinging hard at McChrystal and at Gates and Petraeus. So Biden, Socrates-like, asks another question. What's the best guess estimate for getting things headed in the right direction? If a year from now there's no demonstrable progress in governance, what do we do?" And suddenly it turned into a room full of crickets. And then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton offered her assessment and said, "The dilemma is whether we look at focus on adding troops or making better governance." And said, But not putting troops in, guarantees we won't achieve what we're after and guarantees no psychological momentum. Preventing collapse requires more troops, but that doesn't guarantee progress. The only way to get governance changes is to add troops, but there's still no guarantee it'll work. And then along came Richard Holbrooke, who said something profound. Our presence is the corrupting force. All the contractors for development projects pay the Taliban for protection and use of roads, so American and coalition dollars help finance the Taliban. And with more development, higher traffic on roads, and more troops, the Taliban will make more money. And he also knew all the way back in 2009, Richard Holbrooke knew that the whole business of building a massive Afghan National Army was a fraud. He sent staff to investigate what contractors, otherwise known as mercenaries, think about, say, Eric Prince, for instance. They said they trained a massive number of Afghan police. Well, what Richard Holbrooke found out were they were about 80% illiterate. A bunch of them were drug addicts. You know, they grow a lot of heroin in Afghanistan. Well, they grow a lot of opium that gets turned into heroin. And those problems were for the police forces that really existed and weren't just names on paper. They referred to the ones who were just on paper as ghosts. They got paychecks, but they never showed up, and the bosses cashed the paychecks. It was a criminal enterprise. And so by December, we got the surge. 40,000 of the 85,000 troops that the boys in brass wanted. And some notion that there would someday be an exit. An exit that we have finally accomplished. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful for that exit. And as far as I'm concerned, Lindsey Graham can shut the fuck up. But we understand why the Lindsey Grahams are out there babbling the babble they're babbling. When you realize that there are still a bunch of people with brass jewelry on their shoulder boards who really would like to get their freaking war on some more. Dang, it's cool. Now, what did the traitor Robert E. Lee say? It is a good thing that war is so awful, lest we should love it too much. Yeah. But like I was saying a few minutes ago, I'm very, very glad that I don't do right-wing radio. Because I'd have had to have spent the last couple of weeks talking about how sad I am that we aren't getting more American service personnel killed, that we're not wasting more treasure while we ignore desperately, direly needed things here at home like roads and bridges and food for people who have to struggle to have food. Yeah. Or maybe I'd have to do what Alex Jones did and allegedly take a horse paste pill live on screen. Yeah. It was this past Friday. Alex Jones told the person on the camera to zoom in on a couple of packages. One of them was 3 milligram doses of horse dewormer, and the other was 4 milligram doses of methyl prednisolone. Well, we've kind of known that Alex was on steroids for a while now, haven't we? Yeah. And then, we'll let Alex do it for himself.
Here, people. Overhead shot, please. You know what this is?
This is ivermectin for humans. It won a Nobel Prize as an antiviral. And this is inhalable, or these are the tablet steroids.
No, it did not win a Nobel Prize as an antiviral, you...
I don't know. Idiot or pathological liar. Wait. Let's be a cohesive community. How about an idiotic pathological liar? There we go. Mm-hmm. It's not for treatment of the coronavirus. I don't have to say that, but it kind of has to be said. Now, maybe, look, I mean, if you consider the things, maybe his brain is hollowed out by prions and all kinds of gross and squiggly, wiggly worms and whatnot, but maybe that'll help. And the steroids, well, some appetite he's going to have.
So let me show you. I was going to do this anyways earlier. See this? See this, Fauci? You see this, Bill Gates? I'm going to kill those prions, you bastard murderers. You're going to hit me with a bioweapon, you monster. You want to suppress me? You want to kill me, you son of a bitch? You goddamn demon? You think I'm easy to...
Oh, somebody's been hitting the steroids already, yes. You want to kill me with a bioweapon? All right. And people... And I guess, you know, you tune in for this the same way, I don't know. Folks tune into... And I mean no offense, but professional wrestling. It's the spectacle of it. God. Fauci, you monster.
Think I'm going to roll over to your crap? No. And Joe Rogan kicked your murdering ass, too. You'd love to bury him, too, you little monster maggot. He's in this National Geographic piece about, oh, I don't usually deal with my enemies right away. I get them later. Yeah, you creep up on him with a poison injection, dressed up in a lab coat, you little Joseph Mengele. Nuremberg Code violating monster.
There's the Nuremberg Code again. We're going to have to come up with an Alex Jones bingo card. Nuremberg Code, Nuremberg Code. Yes.
It's damn monster. See our little cancer proteins like that. Nobel Prize winning for humans. 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 What, 2005? Nobel Prize winning for humans. Oh, Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan.
Now, see, he's name-checking Joe Rogan because he wants to ride some of Joe, some of Pink Shrek's numbers. Yeah. But he's a carnival barker. And that's why there's no... You watch the video, you notice that he doesn't make a point of letting people see the pill go in his mouth. He tears something open, a little paper package, and appears to put something in his mouth, but it's covered by his fingers. And then he takes a... I don't know, maybe it's his carbonated, patented, chocolate, paleo... chicken bone beverage. No, he would have made an ugly face if it had been that. Yeah. Jesus. But if you work the right-wing radio side of the street, you got to do this kind of shit. You got to talk about things like monkey jellyfish hybrids from the wet markets of old Kowloon, and how Anthony Fauci's trying to, make America a monkey jellyfish hybrid brain, and then there's the gay frogs. Over here, on the other hand, at least we get to deal in facts. Joe Rogan! Pink Shrek!
He just went and drank the horse paste. He's stupid. I bet he got it from Alex Jones. They're both so dumb. They're both going to be dead.
Yeah, that's why Joe's worth like $300 million. Yeah, he's real stupid. That's why he lives in a $60 million house on the river. You left this.
That's why he lives in a $60 million van down by the river. But that tells you a little bit about his mindset. He thinks that being rich means you're smart. It doesn't. Being rich means you care more about being rich than anything else in your life. And then we all go and we read the poem by Edward Arlington Robinson called Richard Cory. Yes. Richard Cory went home last night and put a bullet in his head.
Shots in dying are the dumbasses. He's the one that headlines with Dave Chappelle. Not you. You're stupid. And I sure wish you'd wake up. But you sit there calling me stupid, an independent media person that built the biggest independent media operation in the world, that changed the whole
in the world.
And you sit around and laugh at us?
Yes.
Medical doctors gave that to me. It is incredible. It helped my family. It helped me. It helped everybody. And it's approved.
Well, I mean, steroids apparently work. I mean, kind of round and orangutan, you know, steroid face he's got going on. Hey, yeah, no. Ron Filipkowski said, I've frozen this frame by frame like the Zapruder film, and I think I'm seeing sleight of hand. And his behavior shouldn't make anyone want to take it. Yeah, no, no. So, that's just a smattering of what's potentially out there. I get a lot of right-wing emails and stuff, but I swear there's a double-secret probation right-wing email list out there where they coordinate this shit on a daily basis. Because we've got another Marjorie Trader gangrene cue ball sighting. She showed up on Twitter yesterday, Sunday, blathering about... no amount of fake ivermectin stories, COVID variant cases, or J6 committee lies in the fake news cycle will cover up what Joe Biden and his administration done in Afghanistan. 13 of our best dead Americans left for dead. Biden armed a terrorist nation. Fake ivermectin stories. It's not fake. That's horse paste. And if you get it prescribed by a doctor, it's probably because you've been up some, you know, Joseph Conrad-esque river in the global south and contracted river blindness, which is caused by a parasite. And the ivermectin works on the parasite, which is not a virus. And so while Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cueball says that it's all fake ivermectin stories, well, the National Poison Data System is a real thing. And the National Poison Data System, which is a clearinghouse for all the poison data from around the United States, all 50 states and territories and whatnot, well, there's been a 245% increase in exposure cases from July to August. Yeah, a month. A 245% increase. Up from 133 to 459. From January 1st to August 31st, the NPDS reported a 1,140, there were 1,143 ivermectin exposure cases. 459 of them in a 1 month period. NPR, in their report Saturday, said, meanwhile, emergency rooms across the country are treating more patients who have taken the drug after being persuaded by false and misleading information spread on the internet by talk show hosts and by political leaders. Most patients are overdosing on a version of the drug that is formulated to treat parasites in cows and horses. Don't leave out the sheep. Meh. Yeah, right. Fake ivermectin stories. This is why we can't have nice things. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Do we, let me check here. Do we have the front porch button up at headon.live? I don't know. Let me know. Meanwhile, as to Alex Jones and Ivermectin, Brother Deacon Asa says, here's how we know that our healthcare systems are not smart enough to deal with the lowest common denominator in our society. Here's the easy solution to overcome morons like Alex Jones and his sycophants. You relabel the Rona vaccine as horse paste. Then you start howling what healing potions are in that horse paste that the government doesn't want us to have. Easy peasy, done. But then it would get out. And then, but, well done. Well done, Brother Deacon. And, by the way, we've got a, okay. Front porch button's up, and, we've had a retooling of the Thomas Jefferson quote, also courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa. Remember that? The tree of liberty must be watered from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. It is its natural manure. Yeah. Minor correction, says Brother Deacon Asa. The tree of liberty must be watered from time to time with the blood of patriots and toddlers. I'm not crazy about that, though, because that implies that the toddlers aren't patriots, and there's nothing that makes a gun humper feel more patriotic than when a lawful gun owner goes out and waters the tree of liberty with the blood of a patriotic toddler. That's sarcasm, but it's not very good sarcasm at all. So, let's see, do we... Let's connect to Sparky and see if anybody comes in or has come in for the front porch. This Labor Day front porch, and right on time. Hey, Sparky, how are you? Happy Labor Day.
I'm fine. It's a nice, clear, blue sky day with clouds.
Ah.
Saw my first vapor trail yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
So, it's looking up as far as the smoke here, anyway. Fires are still going, but it must be blowing the other way.
No, are they making any progress at all?
Yeah, I read that they had the Dixie fire, like, 50-something percent contained.
And let's see, we are now 8 days away from the recall election. Is that right?
I guess so, the 14th, I think.
You've already done your ballot and sent it in?
Yeah, it's already been received and counted.
Okay, you have a gut feeling about this?
Yeah, he's not going to be recalled.
Hope you're right. Because,
from everything I hear, there's more Democrats voting than Republicans.
I hope so. And I hope that it's the way the thing is structured that bugs the hell out of me. You know, you vote twice, and easy way to spoil it, but...
No, you vote once.
But if you vote that there should not be a recall, do you still not get to vote on who you want if there is one?
You leave it blank. Everybody, you've been telling everybody to just leave it blank. I wouldn't know any of the people anyway. Yeah, 46... people from unknown places.
Well, that supposed GOP frontrunner, Larry Elder, the guy who said that a woman was not attractive enough for him to have wanted to rape, showed up at one of those humongous grift centers, a mega church there in Rocklin, California. Are you familiar?
Yep. It's east of Sacramento.
Well,
it's like a bedroom community to Sacramento.
Well, they got a gospel shop there called Destiny Christian Church. And Larry Elder did all three shows on Sunday morning. And the pastor there, uh,
it praised him up one wall and down the other. And among other things, well, this is a church that stayed open during COVID and made sure that that part of California was nice and viral. And they openly defied state law and stayed open, and, you know, no consequences. But what was interesting was that Larry Elder there, Sparky, offered up his vision of what I like to call the Alabamification of California. You know, I predicted this a lot of years ago. I said, you know, eventually they'll come for California, and this is the beginning of it. Larry Elder said he would immediately repeal mask and vaccine mandates, and went on to say that sex education has no place, no role in the school system. So he's pressing all the right. It's kind of like Steve said earlier. He's pressing all the right buttons for Emory and Marvelline, who, by God, they learned about sex the Merkin way, you know, out behind the gym or a dumpster or somewhere. Jesus.
Hey, Robin.
Hey, Steve.
The local drive-in movie.
Yeah. Hey, I've heard this scenario. The California/West Coast folks, I'm curious if you've heard this, that if the polls look bad going into Election Day, that I'm hearing an echo.
It'll resolve.
Okay. That Newsom will resign, which will make the and then the lieutenant governor would become governor, who would appoint him senator after Feinstein does whatever she's going to do. I just heard that. I don't know if that's legit or not.
I don't know where you heard it from.
I heard it from some California folks.
I would doubt it.
Well, we do have a difference of opinion. Lee in New York just dropped a note and said, don't leave the replacement blank. Even if you don't want Newsom recalled, you can still vote for your replacement choice. A blank replacement choice is essentially a vote for Larry Elder, which is what I was afraid of. Because if he should somehow be recalled, then the people who marked a choice are going to be the ones who get a choice.
I thought you didn't get a choice. If you marked no on the recall, then that's it. It doesn't count your vote.
See, this is why it's such a mess.
This is why we need to get rid of recalls.
Yeah. You live with your choice.
This is a perfect example of there can be such a thing as too much democracy.
Well,
a little bit of history here.
Plato agreed with you.
What? Say it again, Robin?
I said Plato agreed with you. Go ahead, Roger.
A little bit of history here. The last one, when Gray Davis was being recalled, the Democrats put the lieutenant governor onto the list of candidates and advocated a vote no for the recall and then a vote for the lieutenant governor in the case that that might be able to put the lieutenant governor in if Gray Davis was recalled and we wouldn't have had Schwarzenegger. The feeling in the Democratic Party was that was a little bit too confusing to vote no on the recall and then advocate for a vote in the next section. And the problems the Democrats have is if they do a vote no on the recall but vote for Jane Doe, John Doe, doesn't matter, on the second place, they get caught in the bind of supporting, in essence, two people on the same ballot. And I think incorrectly, the California Democratic Party feels that their electorate is not sufficiently sophisticated to understand the ramifications and technique of the political agenda as it is set out in this antiquated recall ballot. And to put a candidate into the second tier, they're basically endorsing then a candidate to replace Newsom in the 2022 election, which the party is very unwilling to do.
Well, now see, you just, Roger, highlighted one of the fundamental things I don't understand about the way that the recalls are set up in California. Is the lieutenant governor not in the line of succession to the governor? You know, should the governor die in office or resign or anything like that?
If the governor dies or resigns, lieutenant governor takes over. But due to the quirk, I believe the recall crap comes from about 1918 or something like that, and hasn't been modified since. But when they wrote the recall provisions, they did not put the lieutenant governor being the next in line. Only if the governor dies or resigns does the lieutenant governor become the next in line. Although historically, the lieutenant governor, when the governor no longer decides to run, becomes the most likely candidate in the next primary to be nominated for governor. But there's still a nomination process that goes on, so it's not a guaranteed.
I've got a note here from our pal O-Pipe Down. Sparky has the correct info on the recall, and your former Humboldt resident Roger has the correct analysis. It just seems like a giant mess, and it's almost as though designed to create a problem.
Well, I think the big problem here is that after Schwarzenegger got elected governor, the Democrats, who have held both houses and by the way, like a 60% type percentage in both houses of the California legislature, that they didn't take the opportunity to reform the recall system and simply say, okay, we'll have a recall, but if we're going to have a recall, the lieutenant governor becomes the governor.
Yeah, that's what I don't get.
This whole thing may, because of the date of when the thing was done, about, I think it was 1918, but I could be wrong on that, is that back in the early days, a governor and lieutenant governor, if the governor was committing a crime, it was almost prima facie evidence that lieutenant governor was also involved in the crime, and that would have been the reason they set it up the way they did. But this idea of only a plurality of the candidates on the ballot is just mind-bending, because that Republican could get the governorship with 10-15% of the vote, whereas Newsom could have 49% of the vote.
And
49% of the electorate says, yeah, we want to keep the governor. And 51% say, no, we don't want to keep the governor. And 20% say, this is who the new governor is going to be. It's just absolute stupidity in any organization that would call itself a democratic, small d, society.
So I guess you could also, you could kind of make an argument that where Steve a few minutes ago said it's too much democracy, it's actually anti-democratic. When 10 or 15, you know, when 1% or 1.5, yeah, any tiny number can select a governor over 49%.
Well, it can't be that low.
But it can be pretty ridiculously low, 10, 15, 20.
Yeah, if there were 50 people on the second half of that ballot and the votes were very evenly distributed, the governor could be around 2.5%, the new governor. So, it could be bizarrely low. But in most of the analysis I've seen on this particular election, it's going to be really hard to figure out, because it's going to be based on the number of people who vote on question number two. They have to have a plurality there. And this is where I think the Democrats have made a serious error in not putting a candidate on and advertising of this is our fallback position.
Well, we've heard from Tom in sunny San Rafael, who says everyone can vote on the replacement, whether they vote yes or no on the recall. Personally, I think it was a terrible strategic decision on the part of the Democratic Party to urge people to leave the second half blank. I think it would have been better to run a caretaker, you know, just in case.
Well, as I say, back in the Gray Davis election, they ran the lieutenant governor. And the lieutenant governor did not get enough votes, which is a real slap in that person's political future. I forget who that was.
And so the other side of the coin is also that Caitlyn Jenner's publicity stunt is all but done.
Yeah.
Well, thank heaven for small faith, but I don't know who the bigger asshole is, Caitlyn Jenner or Larry Elder. I'm leaning toward Larry Elder as the bigger asshole.
Well, and now you got to realize that even if Gavin Newsom is recalled, the Democrats still hold overwhelming majorities in both legislative branches in California. And therefore, any of his, and I'm thinking of COVID restrictions, can only be executive order type things. The real, real bad kicker here is that if Dianne Feinstein goes to join Ruth Bader Ginsburg, he would then appoint a Republican, which would then flip the Senate, which would then tank everything.
So you don't have to, in California, a dead senator doesn't have to be replaced party?
No, not in California. Not that I'm aware of. My understanding is that the governor can appoint whoever the hell they want.
Wow. Well, that's creepy. So let's just game this out for a minute. You've got almost untouchable, maybe untouchable majorities in both houses of the California legislature. Does that mean with a Governor Larry Elder and whew, gives me the fantods even saying it? Is it just gridlock state government for however long?
Other than executive order, I mean, I can imagine the legislature continuing to do their work and sending bills to his desk. But if it came up to extending the eviction moratorium or mandating all public school employees get vaccinated or something of that sort, the new governor just wouldn't sign them. Although I'm not in California anymore, so this is kind of a problem for me. But it could be they have enough votes to override the governor's veto.
That was my next question, because in states like West Virginia, it's not like the federal government where you've got to have a two-thirds majority to override. A simple majority will override. Same thing, for instance, when Governor Asa Hutchinson vetoed the anti-trans kids bills in Arkansas, the Arkansas legislature said, well, that's cool, fuck you, and overrode his veto with a simple majority. So does anybody know what the veto rules are in California? Will a simple majority do the job?
67%.
All right. The assembly in California,
so it is two-thirds,
consists of 60 Democrats and 19 Republicans and one independent. And the Senate is 30 Democrats and 9 Republicans, also with a vacancy. So clearly, let's see. If that's one-third, three-thirds. So they've got two-thirds in the Assembly, and they have two-thirds in the Senate. So I don't know whether it takes a two-thirds or not. I'll have to check that. But they've got a two-thirds.
Well, somebody just said 67%.
Yes, it takes two-thirds.
And they've got two-thirds of both the Assembly and the State Senate. So veto overrides are definitely a possibility.
But you know what? Let's not even get there. Let's not have to worry about that. People out in California, do the right thing.
Well, I just wish I was still registered down there and my mother was still alive, because while she was still alive, I got to vote twice.
Might not want to say that out loud.
By the way, Robin?
Statute of limitations are long gone, and secondarily, she signed the ballot, and we discussed it, but I marked it because she was blind.
By the way, Robin, Larry Elder, at least in news articles, says that he will appoint a Republican if elected, and I don't see anything. I did some quick and dirty research. I don't see anything that prohibits him from doing so.
No, and Tom and Sonny San Rafael is in agreement with you. Roger's right. The governor can appoint anyone. Elder's already stated he would actually, I think he said, will appoint a Repig.
Now, does the Senate have to accept anybody that's sent to them by a governor's appointment?
No.
It's not mandatory.
Yeah, and you honestly think Chuck Schumer would play that kind of hardball?
No, never in a million years.
Never in a million years.
I don't know. I just get myself in trouble all the time thinking about weird shit.
No. You know what you're what you're thinking about is power politics. And I'm sorry. I'm sick of aspirations and being nice. And I mean, I have firmly become an ends justify the means. There's almost nothing I would say not to do to get power and to pass laws to. That will benefit people. Short of lying, I have no problem doing anything. Innuendo, ad hominem attacks, all of it on the table.
What, you've become a Republican?
No, I become an. I'm a Machiavellian.
I know you are.
No,
I had to shoot that out for a little.
I'm a Machiavellian because I'm sick of fucking losing. And not only am I sick of fucking losing, I'm sick of fucking losing to the minority. There are more of us than them. We represent more than they do.
Well, half the United States Senate represents 40 million fewer voters than the other half.
Yeah. I'm sick of it. Just fucking sick of it. I frankly think that we ought to get rid of congressional districts and that all seats in a given state should be at large.
Well, there's an interesting point. I could see doing that. I mean, if you take a state like South Dakota, North Dakota, Wyoming, I think Vermont, their congressional delegate represents the entire state. But what's an interesting little tidbit of trivia here is that many years ago in California, the Republicans decided that the Democrats had too much control and were doing too much gerrymandering to maintain control, so they convinced the people of the state of California to create an independent commission to generate boundaries. And one of the criteria is to try and incorporate those boundaries to a like-minded district. And so the big argument in very far northern California was whether the congressional district should be a long skinny down the coast or whether it should be a kind of a broad band across the northern California area. And the people along the coast said, hey, we along the coast have the ocean to tie us together. The fisheries and the spawning streams and all the rest of that. And so we should be a group of down the coast. So the district along the coast goes from the Oregon border all the way down into Marin County, a little thin band along the coast, now represented by a man by the name of Jared Huffman. Rather than an east-west, whereas the West Coast is heavily Democratic, the East Coast is heavily conservative Republican, but the eastern part, sort of north of where Sparky is farming and ranching and desirous of water for irrigation, whereas the people along the coast are timber industry and fishing industry. And the commission decided to go with along the coast. But what happened when they started creating these districts of like-minded folk, as far as issues are concerned, on the issues that are presented to the congressional delegate, has to be a similar group of people. And that really cooked the California delegation to be highly Democratic. And I noticed that not since has a Republican states who have managed to keep a majority of Republicans in the House of Representatives, none of them have advocated for independent commissions anymore. They learned their lesson. They got burnt. And so now you have the red states that want to continue gerrymandering because they realize that when the borders are drawn without political party influences, Democrats win. So I think that's why we see the lack of impetus to change over to independent commissions to draw House boundaries.
Wow.
Didn't mean to kill the conversation.
No. It's, my mind is simply swirling because democracy is hard.
Can I make a comment about this?
Yes, please.
First of all, we all need to get it. We need to get it out of our mind that gerrymandering is some sort of new thing.
No, it's ancient.
This goes back to, I'm just happened to look up Elbridge, which his name was actually pronounced Gary. Elbridge Gary was from 1814. He was James Madison's vice president. In addition to, must have served in the House or whatever the hell. It doesn't matter. This isn't new. So it strikes me as we have, there's, it's either all or nothing. Either you come up with a commission or you come up with statistical software that basically lays some sort of grid over every state that divides it, that divides the districts equally and says we're going to put, you know, in equally in terms of the same number of people roughly per district and let the chips fall where they may, or we gerrymander and we try to create them. I mean, I would be all for. I don't want something independent. I would, or a statistical model. I want, because I think ultimately, gerrymandering, going all in, is the more democratic way to do it. Because the people who get to write, who get to make the districts, are the ones who win the most votes.
But when the elected representative has chosen the voters to be in their district, as opposed to people in their district choosing who their representative is, you've got a problem.
So
now,
what?
With
I
today's,
don't think there's a problem with that.
All right. With today's computers, it is very, very easy to do. You create every single district as near as possible to equivalent population, which that's one of the requirements. Secondarily, you could still say, okay, the second congressional district in California, which runs along the coast, you know, you can put in some criteria. And then the third criteria, the third major one, is that the boundary lines enclosing the proper number of people have the smallest perimeter practical. And that gets you away from some of those really, really weird districts that are drawn in places like Alabama or in Texas with a district around Houston or around Atlanta.
Or that goes the entire length of a state that's like, that's like 5 miles wide but 100 miles long.
That, well, that ivermectin worm that was a district in Texas. I just heard from my dear sister, Terry Ellen, who said gerrymandering is bad under any circumstance, and I tend to land on that side simply because the purpose of it is to defeat the fundamental concept of one person, one vote. And I mean, and it's done in both directions. I mean, you know, Elbridge Gerry, that happened in what, Massachusetts, and it became a gerrymander because it looked like a salamander.
Was it a salamander or was it a hawk?
No,
it was a salamander.
It was a salamander.
Salamander.
Okay. Yeah, hence
the gerrymander. Duh.
Ah.
Yeah. See what you did there.
Yeah, and so as is often, you know, it's almost never done for any decent democratic purpose. We're in the middle of a redistricting now in West Virginia, like everybody else is, because census. And I remember, I'm so old, I remember hollering back in 2016 that we needed to make sure that Hillary Clinton became president because that the president oversees the census. But, of course, I was wrong and I wasn't sufficiently ideologically pure and... and you know that then one, you know, spoiled milk or spilled milk or whatever. But in certainly in the modern sense, it is not used for anything resembling democracy. It is done solely, you know, if you're in a stand state, it is done for the purpose of making sure that the wrong people don't get any kind of voting power. The cat in North Carolina. As Ron pointed out with his note at the beginning of the program, Democrats and unaffiliateds outnumber Republicans by double, and yet the Republicans control almost all of the congressional districts there. Look at what's happening in Texas. That's gonna be gerrymandered, even though Texas is getting a population bump. They're making sure that the increase in that population, which is largely going, which would otherwise tend to favor Democratic voters, won't. It's the only way. We need to understand it for what it is, and the same with the Electoral College. It is the only way by which the Republican Party, which is now just a cranky rump party of disaffected hard cases and dead enders, you know, old white men. That's the only way they have to maintain power now. They can't win on ideas, and they can't win by the strength of their electorate, so the only way they can win is by rigging the game. It's the brakes on the brake on a roulette wheel. It's the loaded dice. It's the Vaseline in the pitcher's glove.
Hey Robin. By the way, I put the Elbridge, the gerrymander-looking district in the chat room. I took a picture of it, and it doesn't look like a salamander to me. But anyway, it doesn't matter. I confess that was my "gee, I just want to be right" photo.
I apologize for that. It's some kind of lizard, as you can tell from looking at the way that the original editorial cartoonist drew. Yeah. It's a dragon. Yeah.
It's got wings. It's got wings. You know what? I don't know at what point. Maybe what I need to realize is I really am fucking cynical. Okay, I was waiting for the "you think so, Steve?"
Tom and Sonny San Rafael pushes back a little bit, signing Tom and Sonny San Rafael, also in the 2nd District, saying, "I have to disagree with Steve. California's commission has worked well. And it's been the way for Democrats to seize power proportional to the population. It was a nightmare before." And that's the thing, proportional to the population. Because, for instance, Texas, it's a pity John Bridavo isn't here to defend his beloved state. No, I'm not going after John. But
he takes Mondays off.
And as well he should. Barbers used to do that. Mondays, the barbers union was Mondays off. But Texas
North Carolina, probably any of the Confederacy states, their delegations do not reflect the nature and makeup of the population. I mean, Alabama has, I think, one African-American member of the House, Terry, can't recall her last name right now. But that district was drawn in such a way as to concentrate the African-American vote through central Alabama and make sure that they couldn't make trouble for any good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christians, Republicans. And this crap passes muster. It passes constitutional muster, especially after John Roberts declared the Day of Jubilee and hollered that there's no such thing as racism in America anymore.
Hey, Robin.
Yeah. Ooh,
sorry, I didn't interrupt. I'm curious, does the Constitution say, what does it say? I mean, as I recall, all it says is that the number of representatives can only, in the original, I think it was 30,000. I don't know, whatever it is now, it's less about the number of people being represented as it is the proportion in a particular state is of 435, right?
Yeah, and it's not necessarily, as we well know, it's not necessarily what the Constitution says, but what the Supreme Court has interpreted the Constitution to have said.
Right. But, I mean, it's 435, so if a state has 10% of the population, they're going to get 44 representatives.
Ostensibly.
Yeah. It doesn't say anything in there that there has to be a defined district, which to me, if you want to be Democrat, the most Democratic way to do it is have them all be at large.
Yeah.
How's that not the most Democratic way to do it?
Well,
that'd be everybody. You know, everybody gets to vote now.
Because the Democratic theory behind the House, you know, if you go through the Federalist Papers, you'll find them saying things like the House of Representatives is going to be where the actual democracy happens.
How's that not democracy, though?
Well, but they wanted it on. Well, they were dealing with a much lower population for starters, and
right.
and populations were centered. The country was rural, but most of the people were in the population centers of, you know, villages and townships, and, you know, that's why you wind up, there's more actual democracy that takes place in places like New Hampshire and Vermont than there are in larger states, and they actually worried about that, the framers did. You know, could democracy survive a huge state? But along those lines, They wanted people to actually have some passing familiarity with the people who were representing them. I should not say people, I should say white men. They wanted the white men back home to have some passing familiarity with the white men who were representing them in Washington, D.C.
Wait a minute, a further caveat, property-owning white men.
Right, naturally, yeah. And so, you know, that was at least the theory behind it, so... You know, if you've got a state like New York with New York City in it, what does that do with if everybody's at large? That's the argument they actually make about the Electoral College and what would be wrong with getting rid of that. Except in this case, it's true. The large population centers would control the representation. Now, it is not true with regard to the Electoral College. And the other thing that has to be factored in here, anytime we talk about any of these issues, these essential civics issues, and we do not talk about the impact that enslavement and enslavement culture had on the framing of the Constitution, means that we're sort of doomed to get it wrong anyway. I mean, the whole idea of proportional representation is affected by the three-fifths clause.
By the way, a caveat, in 1929 is when the House was set to the 435, and it had to do with a problem with them doing it in the 1920. So the membership level was established after the 1910 census. And then it was further amended in 1941 to be the current formula for reapportioning House seats. So this, this goes back to, say, 1920 census is where. What happened was that the way they'd been apportioning them, because of an increased population, no state was allowed to lose a member of the House of Representatives prior to that 1910-1920 census. And in the 1920 census, some states were going to lose. And so they squirreled around everything. And now, after the 1941 amendment, states do lose and states do gain because the House was capped at 435. Had it not been capped at 435, the House of Representatives, I saw somewhere a while back, and this is memory talking, would be somewhere around 800 members of the House of Representatives had we stayed with, you simply added a new House member. The original constitutional one said 30,000. Each member of the House represented 30,000 people. And clearly that's not happening today.
Right. And hold on, Steve, because I just saw Terry pop into the conversation. Are you there? I thought I did, at least.
Terry's the geologist, right?
Yes.
I always get her and Jessica mixed up, and I apologize for that. Hello?
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
I do. It works.
Oh,
yay.
Awesome.
This thing's on.
I had to pick the right microphone to get it to work.
You know, I can imagine Terry was tapping her microphone. Is this on?
I have two, and I have issues with one, and I always have to switch it from it so I can be heard. So I'm glad to be here. Y'all having a very interesting conversation. So.
Yeah, it's making my eyes cross.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole the gerrymandering thing, you know, what y'all said before, it's not good no matter who does it. It needs to be taken out of the hands of either party. It needs to be nonpartisan. It needs to be truly representative of the people in a given area, and it's not.
And the only consideration needs to be one person, one vote.
Let me just clarify from Terry, what Terry just said. I am not against it. I am a Machiavellian.
Yeah, the means justify the ends, or the ends justify the means.
Yes, I didn't used to be that way.
Same difference. But then you're just like a Republican, basically. It doesn't matter. And Democrats have been just as bad about it as Republicans are now. It's all about power. That's not what democracy is supposed to be about. We're talking about representation. Then it needs to be equitable.
It needs
to be an equal representation of the people in a given district to another district. Otherwise, it's not.
I disagree because I'm not just like a Republican, because I want to use power to do things like build roads and build schools.
Well, they want to use power for other things, like squash LGBTQ rights and squash women rights. And to squash abortion rights and other things. They see it just like you do, just in a different way. Their ends are different than yours. Same difference, though. You want to use power for what you want. They want to use power for what they want.
Yeah.
I think they're equally evil. I'm sorry. It doesn't matter.
I do it through the prism of elections. If we win the election and we do everything we can to win the election, we win the election, we're the majority, we have the power, we get to do those things.
And yet somehow we don't.
Because it's not democracy.
No, because we don't have true representation of the voters is what it is. I mean, we have basically the Republicans representing 40% of the population, and yet in all the state legislatures, they have the majority because of gerrymandering. So it becomes a stacked hand.
I just look at it as the Democrats let it happen.
Well, yeah, in a way they did. They lost.
But
Republicans gained power, I think they were more ruthless in their gerrymandering than the Democrats.
And they also
are.
And they feel a sense of urgency because they know better than we know who and what they are. They know that they are mastodons knee deep in the tar pit and on the way down, and they're bellowing for all they're worth, and they're going to do as much damage as they can before they can't anymore.
I
keep bringing up Texas because it's such a perfect example. You know, the highest number of uninsured people in the country, and there's billions of dollars of free money that's just got Texas stamped all over it. But Republicans don't care, because if people get if uninsured people get to have Medicaid expansion, then they might want to keep it, and they might actually pay attention to who got it and who kept them from having it. I mean, there are places where redistricting is not necessarily a bad thing. My state of West Virginia is losing a member of Congress, and I don't care which one loses, but we're going to have one less Republican. And there's not a damn thing these godforsaken maggots can do about it.
And that's a blessing.
Yes,
one less Republican is a blessing. Oh, my God. Yes, it is.
Whether it's David McKinley or Carol the Cat Lady.
There it is. One less Republican. Let's do that in every state. You know, I saw an interesting statistic about Texas the other day saying that they have the most abortions every year in the United States. And it averages around 14,000 abortions.
Yeah. So why
such
not?
Such a moral, upstanding Republican state, too. God.
Isn't it the Mormons in Utah who'd watch the most porn?
Well, and the Baptist and Church of Christ in Alabama.
Basically the Confederate, what used to be the Confederate states. The Southern Bible Belt watches the most porn. Interesting.
Okay.
But Alabama and Utah were in that, I think it was Porn Hamster or something that released the numbers.
Okay, we had a cowbell for that, by the way.
Something like that, yeah.
Pornhub, ex-hamster, I don't know.
Yeah, Pornhub.
But Alabama and Utah. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, since we're going to go lawsuit crazy, I hope lots and lots of women in Texas sue Ted Cruz for encouraging abortion or aiding and abetting an abortion. Because every time a woman of limited means gets pregnant, she has to ask herself some brutal questions. And one of those is, am I going to be able to feed this baby?
Yeah, really.
And in a place like Texas, the answer comes back all too often, no. And so who's making it harder to feed that baby? Well, it's good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christians, Republicans like Ted Cruz and Greg Abbott and Dan Patrick, the lieutenant governor, and that God-forsaken, felony-indicted Ken Paxton, the attorney general.
Yeah.
Sue the lot of them. Sue them 1,000 times because they're the ones. Every Republican member of the Texas state legislature, sue those bastards remorselessly.
Well, you know, Merrick Garland did come out with a statement from the Department of Justice saying that, you know, they're going to be looking at every avenue to protect the right of women in Texas to their constitutional right to an abortion.
And I don't know how the Department of Justice can do that.
Yeah, I don't either.
Short of, you know, briefly detaining 2 or 3 members of the Supreme Court and let the thing go up again. Oh, wow, they're not here. Too bad. Okay, enjoying the... I don't know.
Couldn't a federal warrant be issued for depriving a citizen of their constitutional civil rights? In other words, if I turn in somebody for aiding and abetting a woman to go get an abortion, then the act of turning her in or any of her accomplices would be denying her her civil rights that are guaranteed under the Constitution.
You can't sue the woman who has the abortion. You don't sue her. The law is that you sue
the aider and abettors. Yeah.
Not the woman. She can't be sued.
Well, then you are attacking the civil rights of the individual that aided a
freedom of
in exercising their constitutional rights.
And see, one of the problems before the Supreme Court that let them abrogate their duties was the fact that it is neither enforceable nor will it be enforced. So nobody's going to arrest anybody. The cops are enjoined, I think, by the legislation itself from taking any kind of action. There's no there's no criminality to it.
Deputized. They deputized every citizen of Texas, basically.
Not only every citizen of Texas, they deputized anybody. I could file a complaint against an Uber driver if I knew that he had taken her or she had taken her to the abortion
clinic. Can out of state people do that? I mean, was that in the law? I thought it was just Texas.
It has to be filed in Texas.
Filed in Texas, okay.
But, they've got that website court. I can just go log into. And particularly if I have a VPN, I can make it look like I'm doing it out of Texas.
Well, there's plenty of people in Texas who are filling that little website up with false claims.
Well, I think it's down now because GoDaddy threw them out.
Yeah, but another server picked them up, same one that's picked up a lot of like Parler and some of the other far right websites. I forget what it's called.
Then they'll just keep getting swamped. But the bottom line, though, I want to go back to this idea. Why not sue every Republican in the Texas legislature for aiding and abetting?
Well, how would you sue them for abetting for abortions? I mean, what case do you make?
Because they're making abortions more likely. They're making abortions a necessity by the cruelty by which they legislate. You know, whether a born, because you know they don't give a damn about a child after they're born.
No, they're pro birth, not pro life. There's nothing pro life about this law at all. When pro birth, all about babies getting born and then it's hands off, and these single women get nothing. Forced to have a child they don't want. Forced to have a child out of incest. Forced to have a child out of being raped. Okay, it's beyond evil.
I'd like to throw up another. I mean, I'm agreeing with all that, but I'd like to throw up another one. And that is, I'm female. I get an Uber driver to take me to Planned Parenthood. The next door neighbor, for some reason, has a tracking device on the Uber or whatever and discovers that I have gone to the Planned Parenthood office. And I walk out of the Planned Parenthood office, and another Uber driver takes me home. And then those two Uber drivers get claims saying that they took me to an abortion clinic and therefore aided and abetted abortion. Now, depending on whose statistics you read, it's anywhere from 2% to 30% of Planned Parenthood's patient visits revolve around abortion. So without getting into trying to dig into my medical records, which I find, HIPAA can't even tell whether or not I've had a vaccine, bullshit. But without trying to dig into my medical records, the mere fact that I went to a Planned Parenthood clinic is not prima facie evidence that I got an abortion.
Circumstantial. Can you file on circumstantial evidence?
Well, but you got to remember the standard of proof in this is going to be more likely than not. It's not clear and convincing, and it's not beyond a reasonable doubt. So depends on what kind of jury you get.
Plus Uber has said they will pay any fines or whatever suffered by any of their Uber drivers.
And there was an interesting little moment this morning on MSNBC. Hallie Jackson was interviewing the reporter was doing a stand-up from somewhere in Texas outside of Planned Parenthood. And she reported that when she got up at her hotel this morning and was getting ready to go to the site, and I don't know why MSNBC doesn't pay to rent a car. That's neither here nor there, but what the reporter said is, I got on the app and I asked
for a ride to the Planned Parenthood outside of which she was doing her stand-up. And the ride got canceled twice because I said Planned Parenthood. And then she said, I simply put the address in and the driver came and got me. Which I find quite interesting. People are, maybe there's something inside the Uber algorithm now that red flags the words Planned Parenthood. Which is kind of chill, no, not kind of, really is chilling straight up. So they say, you know, they say that, or maybe it's the individual driver look at, and saying, I'll be there, and then says, no, I'm not doing that. Or maybe they're afraid that somebody's out there tracking the word Planned Parenthood. They've opened a horrible can of worms, and Terry, you know, by January when the Alabama legislature comes back into session, this will be H.R. 1.
Oh, more than likely, yeah. They've already, you know, there's a representative on record saying, you know, somebody asked them if Alabama is going to pursue anti-abortion bill similar to one that Texas has passed, and he replied, is water wet? So they'll make this happen ASAP if it doesn't get overturned in some way. Every damn Republican state is going to do this. It's not a question, I don't think.
So the attack, I mean, I think talking about this within the context of Texas is probably a mistake, because Texas is merely the Fort Sumter. The war, the Republican war against women is nationwide and beats in the heart of every godforsaken Republican in this country.
Well, you know, I think somebody could sue over the definition of a heartbeat. This is known as a heartbeat bill.
Yeah.
The detection of a heartbeat, which is not even a heartbeat. It's merely the detection of electrical activity of cardiac cells in a pea-sized fetus. It doesn't have a heart at that point in time. A definitive heart doesn't occur until about 10, 12 weeks, as we know a human heart to be.
And so
it's not pumping blood at 6 weeks.
Well, so what they think they're hearing at 6 weeks, then, if I understand you correctly, is merely the sloshings of liquid in...
No. It's merely a representation of the electrical signal they're seeing from the cardiac cells that will form a heart. And the instrument is turning it into sound. That's all it is. You couldn't put a stethoscope against a woman's belly who's pregnant at 6 weeks and hear a heartbeat. You could not.
It does not exist.
It doesn't exist. It's 6 weeks of age, development. It doesn't exist. And so, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody sued over that.
It's going to be one lawsuit after another. And frankly,
it's not a heartbeat. Medical doctors have come out and said this is not a heartbeat. It's not a heartbeat as, you know, normally described.
If I was a circuit judge hearing civil cases in Texas, I would slap the first if I was a Republican or a Democrat, because, you know, judges care about is not the administration of justice. Judges care about moving cases off the docket. The minute a case lands on the docket, the clerk informs the judge, and the judge says, "How do I get this off my docket?" That's everything.
Well, that's charming. No, it's not about justice or anything like
that.
Get it off my damn desk.
Yes, by any means necessary.
Okay then, yeah.
And if I was a circuit judge in Texas, I would slap the first and every subsequent Republican member of the legislature I could find, because this is going to create mayhem. I mean, judicial chaos. And there's nothing a judge hates worse than judicial chaos, because it means they have to work, and judges don't like to work,
even during a pandemic.
Right, and double during a pandemic.
Believe me, I've gotten that. I've gotten screamed at from clerks already. And I have a question I want to put out to the Horn, what the Horn folks think of this. I was thinking of doing a GoFundMe for I don't know what the filing fee is in Texas, but use the GoFundMe to start shotgunning lawsuits under this stupid law down there for every single member of the Texas legislature. And just suing them like crazy. Running down the list.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody's already contemplating that. I got a note from Cynthia in the Bay Area. And she says, see, Robin, if these stupid pro-life anti-abortion bastards were smart, they would track everyone giving abortion rides using that vaccine microchip they no doubt also claim vaccinated people are getting with their vaccine. Fucking evil dumb shits. Have I told you lately how much I hate these people?
Because Republican women don't have abortions, right? Those good, faithful, upstanding, God-fearing Republican women don't have abortions.
Of course not, Terry, because they're all virgins when they get married.
Oh, well, that's right. Yeah. And heaven forbid, you know, nobody ever doesn't want a child that's conceived in marriage. Absolutely not.
Oh, heaven forfend.
Oh, Lord, yes, absolutely. Oh, my God.
I would only object to one of Cynthia's comments is that calling them pro-life. These people are not pro-life.
Well, it's in quotation marks.
Oh, okay.
Quote-unquote, yes. Quote-unquote.
Yeah, I mean,
pro-birth.
I can't.
They need to just call themselves pro-birth. I'm sorry, that's all they are. Pro-birth.
Well, I came up with the term fetus fetishists a long time ago, and you know,
they love a fetus. They love a good fetus. Absolutely.
They're anti-ovum.
Of course, some of the anti-vaxxers are that because they believe the vaccines were derived from aborted fetal cell lines.
You know, they're so weird and they're so hung up. I wonder if among these Republican, you know, and because they're always pasty-faced, doughy Republican white men, I wonder if maybe it's because they're so creeped out by menstruation that what they really are is not. They're not pro-birth or pro-fetus. They're just anti-period.
You know what it is, Robin?
Well, they're anti-sex, for one. They're anti-sex.
If anybody's watching.
But you know what I think it also is? They just don't like women.
No.
I honestly think it's that simple. Had they been the child of divorced parents where they had a strong-ass mom who had to go out and work for a living, I don't think they'd be that way. I know that's, you know, and again, I've expressed my view on this. And I think one of the biggest reasons that I've ended up being very pro-woman is because of my mom. And I'll be goddamned if I'm going to have some man, you know, tell my mom what to do when it comes to these things. No way.
Yeah, but one of the biggest supporters of this bill was a Republican women's group.
Yes. They were there in the picture, the yeah, all-white picture.
Standing there, just, you know, thrilled to death. That's
all nine
death
of them. Yes. So, Terry, you saw that photo, too, of those.
Right, yeah, very
did
white.
Did you throw up, too, when you saw all those smiling?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was
beyond
ridiculous.
By the way, that was the
beyond ridiculous.
That was the Stepford Caucus, in case anybody was wondering.
The Stepford Caucus, yeah.
Give yourself a cowbell.
Might as well have been.
Well, I got two. That was the Stepford Caucus, and the Texas law has created the womb posse.
Oh, awesome.
The womb posse.
Womb
okay
posse.
My God, bless America.
Mount up, deputies.
I mean, you know, they can't go after the woman, then go after the doctor, then go after anybody that aids or abets this woman getting an abortion. So, I mean, that's a very wide net that can be cast. And if she stops to get gas, I mean, you can sue the gas station. She stops to drink, you can sue the bar. You know, it's just mind-boggling the net that could be cast with the suit.
How about the Wu-Tang Clan?
Ooh. That's a cowbell.
We're coming to Fox this fall, the Womb Hunters.
Dear God, this is just getting.
Yeah, they want to turn women into incubators.
Oh, did you see the? Did you see? And I mean, it was facetious, but the picture of the new Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders uniforms.
No.
Yeah, they're done up like the handmade costumes from A Handmaid's Tale. Only, you know, the white head coverings have little blue stars outlined in silver.
Oh, that's sweet.
Nice, yeah. You know.
Yeah, I saw a Welcome to Texas sign that somebody had docked up and had the handmaiden on.
And of course, another cowbell for something I saw from our dear friend Joy in Ann Arbor, who is presently behind the. She's behind the. Lone Star Curtain, and that is the renaming of Texas. The new name of Texas is Howdy Arabia.
Howdy Arabia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, a little bit of input on the
home whole, of the American Taliban. Sure.
Damn straight. We've got a little bit more detail on the question of, you know, Uber drivers and what they know and when they know it. Brother Deacon Asa has some inside information. It says, unless you're a tenured driver, the Uber driver does not know where exactly you're going until the actual pickup happens. They have some idea about roughly where and how far you'll be traveling. My guess is some maggot driver showed up, and as soon as they picked her up and they realized where she was going, they canceled the ride. It is possible for a driver to cancel the trip even after they picked the passenger up. Well, what the reporter said was that the ride was canceled before the driver ever arrived. So it could be that Uber is doing something proactively there. I don't know. Oh, and
there was an MSNBC reporter that said she put in the address for Planned Parenthood and it wouldn't pick her up.
Yeah, twice. And then she just did the address and didn't say Planned Parenthood, and they showed up. Odd. And we also have an answer as to what the Department of Justice is planning on doing. Darlene sent this along from a Washington Post article. DOJ is going to base their actions on the FACE Act, F-A-C-E, the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act from 1994. The pull quote from Merrick Garland is, "We will not tolerate violence against those seeking to obtain or provide reproductive health services, physical obstruction, or property damage in violation of the FACE Act." And the FACE Act prohibits threats and obstruction of a person seeking reproductive health services or providers.
Hey, Robin.
Yeah.
This sounds an awful lot to me like a real live bona fide nullification argument with what Texas is engaging in. And I think with what you just read about DOJ is that will throw down that Texas will throw down the gauntlet regarding that. Am I all wet?
Well, it seems to me that they're trying to nullify Roe versus Wade outright.
Yeah, that's what they're trying to do. Exactly. Throw it back to the states so the states can decide, and there is no constitutional right to an abortion is what they want.
But it is, and until such time as the Supreme Court deigns to overturn Roe v. Wade, the right of a woman to seek termination of a pregnancy within the parameters Roe establishes, it is as much a constitutional right as their sacred right to their guns is.
And that's it.
And that's what they don't understand. If you can take away one constitutional right, you can take away bunches of them.
That's it. They can just, if this stands, any state legislature could do something like this to refute any SCOTUS decision ever made, whether it be same-sex marriage, voting rights, the, you know, Civil Rights Act of 1964, so on and so on. Any decision by the SCOTUS.
And Terry has really hit on something there. What's next in the crosshairs, as Robin has been saying for, I don't know, 60 or 70 years, is that Griswold is in the crosshairs.
Griswold was always the target.
And you know what's going to be in the crosshairs after that?
Tell.
Brown versus Education in 1954?
It's the I can't remember the name of the case. The same-sex marriage case, or marriage equality case.
Oh,
yeah, that was 2016.
Yeah, Obergefell.
Obergefell.
What was the, Edie Windsor? Wasn't Edie Windsor the name of the woman who she and her then?
Well, and how long? You know, how long until? I mean, we already know by virtue of the suit that was filed by the those 20 attorneys general last week.
Mm-hmm.
They're after the Bostock decision. And they think that they've got the votes to overturn that and reestablish anti-trans discrimination in the workplace. But they got a list. I mean, it's really out there. I remember talking with Sandra about this. Oh my God, 10 years ago, they have not hidden what their agenda is.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
And the thing is, you know, Loving versus Virginia. Why not? They want Plessy back. They want,
They want to go back like 50 years. They want to overturn so much shit.
Oh, 120, Terry, because one of the ones that's a real fetish object for them, and I can't remember the it was the case out of New York where the state of New York acted to limit the hours that a baker could work.
Lochner.
Yes, of course. How could I forget? Yeah. Well, I mean they've got crosshairs on Lochner. They want to go back to that ugly.
I've heard some talk about child labor laws.
Yeah,
they need to repeal those.
Right,
Robin Lochner, as you have said, that's the crown jewel.
Yeah,
because that's Lochner was really the precursor to a lot of national law. I mean, let's be honest here. Lochner is what inspired people to fight for the New Deal.
Yeah.
Am I wrong? Or No.
And these right wing think tanks that put it
1905.
Have put it in plain language that they want to see the Lochner era returned and that stupid legal fiction of privity of contract, wherein the bosses with the money are deemed to be on the same footing as the person desperate for a job. And Terry knows, and I know, that, you know, there's the war is real. And anybody who takes any of this as being a matter of one particular group being under attack doesn't understand the real nature of the way they operate.
Civil rights are not about trans folks and gay folks and black folks and women folk. It's about civil rights are not civil rights. Civil rights should be human rights.
Civil rights are human rights, and they attack piece by piece as a means of, well, it's Napoleonic warfare. It is it's divide and conquer stuff.
But you know, the gist of civil rights basically is always applied to white heterosexual Christian males.
Absolutely,
that's the pinnacle of civil rights, and they get pissed as hell when anybody else has accorded those same rights.
Yeah,
from women's rights to black brown people to, you know, Irish to anybody. They get pissed.
Any other
beside them.
I mean, you again, Robin. We've talked about this on the show, on the program. Look, go back and look at the cartoons of Irish people.
Yes. Uh-huh. Drawn like apes.
Drawn like apes.
Mm-hmm. Jews in the 30s of Nazi Germany. Evil looking.
In Henry Ford's own newspaper. What was it, the Dearborn something or another? Yeah.
I mean, Irish, mm-hmm. At least in this country, the Irish, I think Italians were drawn that way.
Yeah.
Chinese, Japanese. It's been every minority, ethnicity, every color that's not white. You can go on and on and on.
And
the same arguments are used again and again.
It's whether they have a different color. They don't come from the right part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the wrong religion. Let's be honest here. For what everyone thinks about Catholicism, that's why the Italians and Irish were right in the crosshairs.
JFK.
JFK.
I received
railed about him. Is he going to take orders from the Pope?
The Pope.
Yeah, I received.
Have you ever seen the speech where he sits there with all those evangelicals saying, "I'm not going to listen to the Pope. I'm not going to let it just and."
Yeah.
And West Virginia believed him, and West Virginia is why he wound up getting the nomination. But it's interesting you would bring that up, Steve, because in the mail the other day, and I don't remember seeing this happen in recent memory or anything, but just a book with a mailing label on it arrived from, God, something like Restoration Press. And it was addressed strangely. I mean, it was to Robin R. Kincaid. Which is weird, but it was a reprint of an 1896 book warning of the Roman Catholic Church's growing influence on the government of the United States. 1896. I didn't pay much attention to it. I don't even know if I still got it. I may have, but.
Was the Great Controversy?
No.
Great Controversy. That was Ellen G. White. The Great Controversy.
Yeah. I can't remember. I'll look for it when I find it. But it's interesting that the conversation would turn in the direction that it has, because one of the big stories over the weekend was an apology that was issued by Mark Zuckerdweeb and the rest of Fascist Book. And it raises a question, because this happens every time an AI gets out there. You remember a few years ago where it took like less than 24 hours for an AI bot that Microsoft set up to just become a full-on Nazi? I remember, because it starts, you know, hi, and introduces itself on Twitter, and 24 hours later, Microsoft shuts it down because it was doing as close an impression of goose stepping as an AI bot can do. It went full Nazi in less than, I mean, it went from zero to Nazi in 24 hours.
Damn.
So there's another one. And,
excuse me. Sorry about that.
It's okay. Facebook.
Okay, before we leave the Catholicism thing, you know, you have seen that Biden is getting a lot of grief because he won't uphold, since he's a Catholic, the church's position.
The odious U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Ugh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, whose general secretary got caught, you know, like with a man in his mouth.
Hey, Robin and Terry, did you see Jen Psaki gave that great response? When that reporter said, well...
Yeah, these are questions you will never have to answer.
Yeah. They were like, well, he's Catholic. Why doesn't it... And she basically say, look, he has it. Everyone knows his personal position, but he feels it's not his position. It's not his place to tell a woman what to do. And I just...
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you know, let's be honest. I challenge anybody to be more Catholic than Joe is.
Oh, yeah, the man goes to church every Sunday.
He goes to church
Mass.
Or more. But you know what he also does? And again, I don't want this to come into a pro-Catholic thing, but he also takes that against war shit seriously.
Yeah, he walks the walk and talks the talk. I mean,
yes.
Yeah, I mean, he brought our troops home. And I'm sorry. Was it done the best way? No, but I don't think anybody could have done it in a good way. It was a shit fest waiting to happen, no matter. And to think that Donald Trump would have done a good job of it is beyond.
He would have gone to Afghanistan and thrown paper towels, stupid bastard.
God,
do you think that he would have actually done it? I don't even think he would have ended it had he been reelected.
Oh, I don't know.
Did any of you see Michael Moore's appearance on MSNBC? And how he analyzed the picture of that lieutenant major or major general or whatever it was, the last guy to walk onto the airplane.
I saw that, Roger.
How he was walking forward. He was not walking backward. He didn't have his gun pointed out. And it was just an amazing number that Michael Moore did on MSNBC the other night. If you can find it, look at it. It's fantastic.
I did see that.
I did not. So.
It's worth looking up.
Okay.
You know, one of the note coming in from Cynthia, and don't forget, these hate mongers are all, everyone, to a man, especially to a man, good, upstanding Christians who are all saved by the blood of Jesus and going to live forever in heaven with the golden walls keeping everybody else out. Hey, you pigs, I got your golden walls right here as I piss all over it. Bad me, but hey. You are forgiven, Cynthia. Now back to the AI for just a minute, because this is, God bless America.
God bless America.
Facebook had an AI algorithm that identified topics.
Topics.
And so somebody uploaded a video, and you know, and when you hear the when you hear what it's about, you know the mindset of the person doing it. It was a video of black men in altercations with white police officers. And the Facebook AI labeled it about primates.
Well, ain't that nice?
Over at the Daily Mail... in the story, they noted viewers, having watched it, were then asked if they by Facebook, would you like to keep seeing videos about primates?
Oh, God.
And so Facebook said, this was clearly an unacceptable error, and we disabled the entire topic recommendation feature as soon as we realized this was happening, so we could investigate the cause and prevent this from happening again. Right. So, I mean, they took it down to... they're probably going to give it the AI some
bless their hearts. Yeah. Bless their hearts.
Bless their little old hearts.
Bless their little hearts in a good Southern way.
God love them. They can't help it. They're just AIs. Oh, God. But so that, you know, that the Facebook AI turned racist in less than 20. Kind of makes me worry a little bit about our whole AI future there. I don't know about you.
You think?
Yeah. A little worrisome. But one thing I wanted to bring up, and just because this conversation has been so scintillating, talking about cases that the right wing ultimately wants to go after. You know, Roe gets you to Griswold. Griswold gets you all over the place. Then there's Plessy. And it's amazing how difficult it is to get people to understand this. But Plessy, of course, what survives to this day is not the tormented legal reasoning of the majority of the Supreme Court in Plessy, but the thunderous fire and brimstone dissent filed by Justice Harlan, who said, y'all are going to be remembered for this, but not in a good way.
Separate but equal.
Plessy established separate but equal. And I have had to try to, you know, when all of these anti-trans kids playing sports, and it's not anti-trans kids, it's anti-trans girls. Okay, let's just be clear about that.
Yeah, pretty much. They don't care if the trans kids trans boys. They don't care because they're not going to win.
They're going to try to play. They're going to try to play football, and the real boys out there beat some sense into them.
Mm-hmm.
Just let them be blocking dummies or something on the practice team. Terry and I know.
Even though girls have played football, girls have been quarterbacks of football teams. So, you know, that kind of precludes them from playing.
Yeah, but
I wonder if they realize that.
But they
won't get to play, whereas they have before.
Yeah, the reason, you know, West Virginia's throwing away a fortune trying to defend this stupid bill because we're so, our Republicans are so stupid, they actually said it's about, in the legislation, they said it's about trans girls.
Oh, it's about trans girls.
Okay. They didn't make it illegal for trans boys to compete because girls have been wrestling on high school wrestling teams here for years, and of course there was the cis girl in North Carolina who whoop-assed on every boy in North Carolina.
Won the male state championship high school. It's like, oh my God, where's all the complaints about that? I mean, Lord, you can't have girls beating up on boys.
But it happened. So what Plessy does is it blesses through tormented reasoning the idea of separate but equal. You know,
as long as it's equal, that's the key point. As long as it's equal. Which, of course, never happens.
And so, you know, these Republicans setting up these anti-trans kid bills are Plessyizing our children.
Mm-hmm.
they're setting there, because one of the things I've heard is, well, why can't the trans kids just all compete in the trans kids league? Do you really know how many of us there are?
Yeah, we can't make a team.
I don't think we could come up. I don't think we could come up with a starting 11. Or a starting side in an all trans soccer team in this state. And what, you know, and you're going to get kids from Wheeling and Martinsburg together with trans kids from, I don't know, a border county like Mingo. It's going to be a little difficult to organize the practices. Of course, then they can just set up the Plessy separate but equal trans academy and hold that in a cardboard refrigerator box somewhere about, Fraser's Bottom, West Virginia. I mean, that's where they're going, and they'll tell you if you ask them. Oh hell yeah! You know, we need a little ghetto for the kids who don't fit in.
Pretty much, yeah. They make us uncomfortable.
Don't
just like black people made them uncomfortable. Just like Irish people made them uncomfortable. Just like it's always that is the basis of their hate. You make me, I don't like you. You're not like me. You make me uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Of course, and it's not a bad thing. It seems like a good thing. Alabama opened its own sort of, because I saw the story from you, Terry.
Mm-hmm.
Opened its own sort of
charter school.
Plessy charter school for kids who don't necessarily meet all the gender and sexuality norms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very LGBTQ-friendly, affirming school. Cis, straight kids can also go. It's not strictly LGBTQ kids, but any child can go there if they so desire. In the Birmingham area, of course, Birmingham, Alabama. That was huge, and it took them forever to get their charter. I mean, just it was nuts, the discriminatory practices over denying that charter.
So a little trans kid, let's say a little trans girl from Florence, couldn't go.
No.
It's not a boarding school.
I don't think it's a boarding school. No. I don't recall it being having dorms or anything like that. It's not like the arts high school and the math and science
right.
High school. It's down here in Mobile. And then there's an arts one in Birmingham.
Yeah,
those do have dorms. Those are boarding high schools.
I actually got admitted to that high school, and folks
wouldn't
let me.
Who wouldn't let you?
My parents.
Really? Why?
Well, I think my dad was concerned that I might get all. Let's see, what did he call gay people? Flowers. I might get flowery.
Flowered. Okay then.
Yeah, you know, because arts and theater and those
that's
people.
Right.
And
hey, hey, Robin.
Oh, Robin.
Yeah, Steve.
You know, I'll tell you what your response to your dad should have been. Dad, let me tell you about some flowery people. Paul Horning, Alexander the Great.
Yeah, he wasn't hearing any of that.
I had a friend of mine who actually dated Paul Horning. Dave Copay.
I didn't know that. I didn't know Paul Horning was gay.
Well, all I know is a friend of mine from years ago had these. He met Paul in up in New Hampshire, and he had all these photographs of him and Paul in hot tubs and shit. And he had these autographed pictures of, hey, my friend's name was Paul in addition to Paul Horning. And he had I remember at one point my friend Paul didn't know who he was. So he had these autographed photographs of, hey, Paul had a great, you know, that were written to my friend Paul, signed Paul Horning. And he said he showed his dad. His dad was like, do you know who Paul Horning was? And my friend's like, I don't have a clue. And he told him who he was. He's like, oh, yeah, we had an affair, and wow, it was great, and yada, yada, yada.
And he said, no, not an affair.
Yeah. By the way, Terry, I'm angry at you. Because you're not here enough. You have a lot to contribute, and I really hope that you drop by the porch a little more frequently than you have.
And we have to find geology things to talk about, Terry.
And I was just going to say, you need to geologize. I mean, I want some serious geologizing here. I said that to you, Robin. Didn't I say that in an email or something
that
one time?
You did.
So, Terry, you need to start geologizing, and I'm a little bit I'm a little bit upset that there hasn't been some geologizing here. Terry?
Is that, I don't,
I thought we were going to get sidetracked by gay football players.
Okay, now that was...
You know, you said Dave Coquet?
Yeah, y'all should be able to hear me again.
I remember him.
Yeah, he was like one of the first... did he play for the Packers? Oh, my God.
I don't know. He might have played for the 49ers. I don't know. His name's familiar. I don't know. Remember exactly who he played for.
But gay football player Dave Coppe played for the Packers. That would just be too much. The goddess.
Can I check one thing about football over this weekend?
Yes.
If you have to.
I sent you a video of the Wisconsin Stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
And they got this thing called the jump around.
There must have been God.
70,000 people there.
Sparky, it makes the whole damn stadium shake.
It's one hell of a petri dish, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, yeah. A lot of them were.
It even looks like a petri dish.
Yeah.
By the way, staying in a football number, the OSU played their first home game in like 19 months at Outsum Stadium. And in order to get into the stadium, you had to prove you were vaccinated. But they did not require it for the parking lot tailgate parties. Game started at 11. The crowd started showing up at the parking lot at 7 in the morning.
Oh, my God.
And so there were a lot more people out in the parking lot, but there wasn't any requirement to be vaccinated in the parking lot. So those that weren't vaccinated just partied out in the lot, and those that were went into the stadium.
And the drunker they got, the closer they got, and there's up in each other's faces.
Oh, I'm sure there was a bunch of
grapple. Oh, man, I love you. Go Ducks.
Yelling, just Marvin to become how much virus was spewed. That
it was in the parking lot. It wasn't inside the stadium.
It wasn't inside. It was outside. But
Yeah, but still.
You know what Roger just illustrated, Robin? Again, shit you and I have talked about. That's why college ball beats the piss out of the no fun league.
No, oh, I'm right there. Yeah, even though I'm grieving. I'm grieving. I spent Saturday watching my beloved Mountaineers snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. Four turnovers.
Oh wow! Did they run a draw play on third and long?
Yes, they did. Because you know you can hear the gnat sound. I hear the terrible terrapins yelling draw.
And I'm sorry, but that's funny. I've realized we connect.
And because at that time I was deeply into my Mountaineer mode, and I was just a mess. And I said, "Oh fuck, no, you didn't." And yep. And did it work? No, it didn't work.
Of course not.
But there's good news. Terry and I's alma mater, the tide rolled.
Yeah, they did roll.
I mean,
I didn't watch it, but yeah, they won.
Okay, Robin, we have to do a little savoring here. Georgia 10, Clemson 3.
Yeah, gotta love it.
Gotta love it. Yeah. Gotta love it. And Terry, did you hear me about you coming by here more often?
Yes, I did. Okay. Geologizing. You want me to
geologize?
Geologize. Okay. I can make that happen.
Okay, cool.
I would like that a lot. A lot of people would like that a lot. In fact, I got a message here. Let me see. Via the Twitter.
By the Twitter.
Yes. I love when you have Terry on.
Yay!
So
nice to be liked.
Oh, you are loved, and it's like old home week for me. So.
Which
we had old home week.
We did. Saw each other for the first time in 35 years in real life. So, yeah, it was awesome.
Terry, you and Robin went to high school?
Yes.
I could not hear that.
Well, Steve's away from his microphone, apparently.
Oh, okay.
No. Terry, you... Okay, yeah, there we go. Sorry about that. You and Robin went to high school together?
Yes.
That is correct, yes.
Yes. We were blocking dummies on the football team together.
That's right. Her number was 74 on the freshman football team, and my number was 75, and we were standing next to each other in the freshman football picture in our annual.
Yes.
And who knew?
Who How trippy that, is that?
Who knew that 1,000 years later?
I know. It's bizarre. It's surreal. Yeah.
You know what? Yeah. Shit has a way of coming back to just... It just has a way.
Oh, sheep.
Neither one of us knew each other were trans. That was not.
No, we were good.
Back then.
We certainly knew each other. We were good friends.
Yes, we were.
But yeah, neither one of us is going, hey, you? No, me neither. Me neither.
But I suspect that there was a connection there that in those times you probably wouldn't been able. You didn't know what it was, but it was there.
Yes, more than likely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, we had a lot of the same classes together. She's much better at math, mm-hmm. so not those.
Robin, your little granddaughter there at home is better than math.
Yes, without a doubt. I'm not ashamed to say it. When she pulled into the drive, I was already there at the house when she pulled in. And the minute she pulled in, the tears just started running down my face. And it's like, oh, my God, I can't believe this. This is real. And
yeah, it was awesome. It really was. It was just beyond awesome.
But the most important part, Robin, were you wearing your waterproof mascara?
Yes, I had gone waterproof that morning for that very reason. Plus, it was hotter than the hubs of hell, and I knew I was going to sweat it off.
It was
anyway.
That. Yeah, you're right about that. It was a hot, sweaty mess by the time I got there, loading the car, unloading the car, and all that. Yeah.
So you not only cried, but you looked fabulous doing it.
Oh.
She did. Absolutely. Yes.
Now we have to get that really nice parasol I sent you.
Absolutely. We went out onto the balcony when things had settled down. We went out onto the balcony with the blue sky and the sun and the surf behind us. It wouldn't be there for that much longer. Thank you, fucking Ida. And took a selfie. And
yes, we did.
And Terry played and sang at our karaoke night. And I sang very badly at our karaoke night.
What'd you sing?
Oh, we sang a lot of things.
She sang Ring of Fire.
I sang Ring of Fire. Mm-hmm. And
you don't have to call me.
And Heather and I sang You Never Even Call Me By My Name, which turns out to be a really appropriate trans song.
It does.
Yes, I was just going to say. Yeah.
And then, of course, I had to, because it's a moral requirement when hillbillies go on the road. We sang Take Me Home, Country Roads.
Oh, I was going to say, Take Me Home, Country Roads.
That was good. Karaoke was fun. That was a good time.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
And there's some good pipes in that group too.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Hey, Robin, did you tell Terry about our plans to go to Terry? Robin and I are starting to make plans about we're going to go to either the Kentucky Derby or we're going to go to some tailgate parties down in the SEC area, where I'm going to wear like a seersucker suit with a bowler
and a straw hat.
Yeah. And Robin's going to wear like one of those big old frilly Southern Belle
dresses. Yeah, ain't no hoop skirts.
With the pantaloons.
Absolutely. And a big old and a frilly parasol, and she's going to be...
Well, you know, we have those down here in Mobile. Yes. They're the Azalea Trail, man.
Oh, absolutely.
And how they don't have heat stroke every summer is beyond me. It's like, oh, my God.
And she'll be on my arm, but but I will have to say the funny thing, it will be that Robin will be about 6 inches taller than I am. So
SLW.
What? Say it again?
SLW.
Yes.
Suspiciously large woman.
Yes. And I just can't wait. I can't wait.
Well, and that Azalea Trail thing in Mobile is epic. And so is Marty. So is Marty.
Have you gotten in heels yet? And then you could make that 6 inches, 9 inches.
No, because I have no. You know how it is at the Kentucky Derby. When a horse goes down, they shoot him on the track. My ankles can't stand it.
I just want to see.
And besides, they really don't exist in 13 wide. They just don't.
Yeah. Well, that's where you and I, we do have something in common, is I have those 13 wide shoes. But I want to see you, like, with your little lace gloves, you know, holding on that mint julep, and you fluttering your eyes at me.
It's getting a little weird, Steve.
Oh, but it was, you know what?
I declare,
I've got the vapors. Somebody get the smelling salts.
Me without my smelling salts.
At least after your story about the doctor's office, we know you've got your Miss Doubtfire down, where you can tune down people when you have to.
And I got to tell you, well, by that point, it won't be, you probably wouldn't get comments, but I just forgot what I was going to say. That's what happens.
But it was one of the most wonderful parts of the whole trip was, I feel like I really did grow, not in height, stature. I grew spiritually.
Your heart grew 3 sizes that day.
Yep, yep. Skin's not quite so green anymore. I mean, but I got just a boatload more self-assurance. And comfort in my own skin, and it would not have happened without that magnificent group of people, because they were wonderful, one and all.
And it was awesome to see.
And I love anybody who will wipe out an entire pork shoulder that I have lovingly smoked. That thing did not last.
No, it did not.
I mean, I pulled it and put it in a pan. It's like, shit, where'd that go?
Yeah. You know what that tells you, don't you?
That the
ability to snarf down good pork shoulder has no gender.
No, it does not.
Absolutely not. No.
Barbecue.
It knows no gender. That's it. Appetite does not know a gender.
Yes. By the way, I'm not, all the stuff that I'm saying here about Robin and me, this is not joking.
No, we're gonna
take a mountaineer
blue lot, yeah.
Absolutely.
After all of this is all this damn, well, I don't know if the pandemic's ever going to be over, but yeah.
I know this is going to be like the seasonal flu shot, I think, is what we're going to be having.
And you know, who knows? Yeah. The voting demographic may change dramatically down south. They're Darwinianly self-selecting themselves out of it.
Well, I went and got a pound of barbecue. It being Labor Day and all today, and restaurant I went to, went and picked it up and went inside. I was practically one of 3 people wearing a mask, and there were about 30 people in there.
Sounds about right. Yeah. I can't hear a thing you say with that thing on your face. That's what the hotel clerk told me that Tuesday night, the 24th.
Well, it's like, you ought to say, well, you're hard of hearing.
I shared a picture last night of a guy wearing a shirt at the very top that said that the vaccine has caused more deaths in Hiroshima, amongst other bunch of facts.
Jesus.
Idiotic. It's just idiotic.
And they're proud of it. They're just proud of it.
People are just moronic. Oh, yeah, and of course there's anti-vaccine protesters marching outside a hospital in Texas today, chanting, "My body, my choice."
Completely unironically aware of what they're doing.
Yes, the irony of that.
I mean, I was just going to say that. The irony, that kind of irony is...
Now do Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
As thick as pea soup.
So I got a lovely note from our dear sister Jude in the Great Northwest. An aspect of my spirituality in solidarity with the women in Texas and all over the world. As I'm listening to all of you engage in this issue of terminating a pregnancy, I found myself back in time. It's on a visceral level presently, so bear with me as I offer my story. I awaken, nauseated, and somewhat disoriented. Yes, the reality floods me as this hospital bed is hard and cold. Then tears flood me spontaneously as I'm alone. Opening my eyes, the physician is there, bending over to look me in the face. "Have you paid now?" He smiles at me as he leaves the room. I've not thought of that specific interchange in decades. What was he trying to convey? A moment kept private till this moment, listening to the horn. In peace. Signed, Jude.
Wow.
God. The idea that there are Republican men out there who think that they are better, they are in a better place to make that decision.
Uh-huh.
You know, well, there's a reason I'm not a religious person, because if that great big lightning bolt wielding plague assigning deity was up there, none of these pasty-faced, doughy white Republican men would be anything other than a greasy spot on the ground. It would be raining fucking lightning bolts.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's...
Yeah. Can I ask? I mean...
It should be. It should be raining lightning bolts. It really should be.
I have a question.
Yes?
What made me come to my view about the stuff in Texas was I saw my mom.
Yeah.
And look, my mom and I haven't spoken in months. We haven't seen each other in years, probably 10 years. And I just wonder, do any of these people see their mom when they vote for these laws? That's the thing that I couldn't help. The one thing I couldn't help but think about.
Well, it's kind of in line with something that Terry and I were talking about. You know, our mothers both carried us to term during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine waking up every morning and you've got a 5 or 6 month baby in utero, and you wonder if it's all going to go up in a nuclear flash in the morning. They say stress is transmissible through the placental barrier.
Well, I would have got plenty of it, that's for damn sure, since I was born in January of 63.
Yeah, same.
October of 62, the October missile crisis,
yeah.
Cuban missile crisis in October.
Yeah, you were about 6 months. I was maybe 3 weeks behind. And that stuff's the stress and the trauma are generational. And I just, I wonder about our generation. Specifically that narrow little demographic of us. And, you know, what it did. But it's been a magnificent conversation, everybody. I've enjoyed it immensely. I hope you have as well.
Yes.
And Terry, thank you so very kindly for jumping in. Started on one topic, and the way things work around here, that we found our way to a host of others. And I really appreciate you jumping in. And Roger,
you're welcome, man.
Roger and Steve and Jeremy and... Stephen, I heard, I think, along the way, and just thank you all. It's worth remembering what Labor Day is for and the sacrifices that were made for it. It is something more than just the party that ends the summer. But I guess we can all cue up Don Henley singing The Boys of Summer now. Feel it in my bones, summer's out of reach. Here we go. I'll be freezing soon. I told Terry on the when we got back here, I said, I miss the heat and the humidity, and it's like fall already here. And I mean, that's Appalachia, but you know, we've had some beautiful days, except yesterday. Yesterday was just a rainy, sodden Sunday in Scotland kind of misty mess. But you know, here comes autumn, and well, here it comes. But thank you, each and every one for. Joining in the conversation this night, this evening, this afternoon, whatever time it is, or whenever it is when you're listening to the podcast. Thanks to those of you who jumped in on fundraising this evening. We got down to $245, and that's wonderful. Thank you. And we will see how that goes tomorrow. And thanks to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers and our a la carte contributors. You're why this program continues to exist. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room and in the old holler tree we sublet from the Keebler Elves, wherein we keep the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand-new Fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is, of course, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. This would be a great time to reach out to your member of the House of Representatives and ask them to please, please, please co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. It means the world to Appalachia, and sometimes you gotta jingle them again to be a little bit of a nuisance. Not mean or anything, just say, you know, hey, I called you a couple of weeks ago. I don't see your name on the bill yet. Why is that? Get with it. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Do everything you can, more now than ever. If you haven't gotten your vaccine, get it. If you can get a booster, get that. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Wear your gloves if under certain circumstances. Take hand sanitizer everywhere you go. Pocket, purse, backpack, European-style messenger bag. Just make sure you got it and make sure you use it. Maintain your social distance 15 to 20 feet, according to Paul from Parts Unknown, and Paul would know. And for God's sakes, if some AI bot comes towards you saying, would you like to see another video about primates? Tell Mark Zuckerberg no and avoid him like the plague, because he is. Later.